back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20.
Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds?
Yes. Manningham on the sideline.
Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, Lance Medem.
And welcome to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. Lance Medem with you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with the New York Giants. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. You could also chime in on the conversation via Twitter. Use hashtag GiantsChat. And you can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Medem. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. In terms of the news related to the New York Giants, they have added a number of undrafted free agents. They've added 9, which are official. I know there is some speculation about a player or two, but 9 right now are official, the majority of them on the defensive side. No surprise, Giants trying to round out their 90-man roster now that the draft has been finalized and they're going to get into the thick of all of their offseason activities before training camp gets started. We will be taking your phone calls in a little bit, but John Schmelk, who is not here with me today, did have an opportunity to sit down with Tony Pauline, the draft insider for draftinsider.net. So we're going to get to that interview first, where he breaks down all of the Giants' draft picks and explains the areas where they'll flourish and the areas that they certainly need to improve on. And then following that, we'll get into more detail about the Giants' draft picks. We'll get your feedback on all that's happening regarding the New York Giants. Hashtag Giants Chat you can utilize during the course of the interview, and you can follow and interact with me at Lance Medem. But right now, here's John Schmelk, who had an opportunity to sit down with Tony Pauline to take a closer look at the Giants' 2014 draft class.
Why, thanks, Lance. And now we're joined by the draft insider for draftinsider.net. That is Tony Pauline. You also saw him on a bunch of other stuff right before the NFL draft, breaking it all down. Tony, I walked by Radio City, actually, the night of the draft. Were you on SNY? I thought I heard your voice coming off that stage.
That was me. I did SNY, actually, all 3 days of the draft. It was actually my home away from home, as well as the Philadelphia Eagles complex. But, yeah, I was. My ugly mug was all over the SNY airwaves from Thursday night really through Saturday night when the draft had officially ended.
And now you can take a deep breath. Is your 2015 mock draft out yet? I'm just kidding.
You know, not yet. First thing is I'd really like to know when the 2015 draft is going to be, because I'm either a week behind schedule or I've got extra time depending on where they place it. I usually, in the past when the draft was at the end of April, I would take about 2 weeks off before starting to hit the film again to prepare for the following draft. So, I mean, we're at that 2 week precipice here. If it's going to be the middle of May, I got an extra week. If it's not going to be the middle of May, then I better get cracking to hit the film to get a foundation on the guys for the 2015 draft. I'd just like to know what the dates are going to be. That's all I'd like to know.
And I think all of us would like it to be a little bit earlier, but we'll see exactly what happens with the league. They got such good ratings. My guess is they're going to leave it in May and hopefully not expand it to a fourth day, but you never know.
You know, as long as Roger Goodell can pull the Michael Sams and the Johnny Manziels and the Manti Te'os out of the hat, it's just an event that's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And much to the dismay of not only people like yourself and me, but front office people. I mean, the scouting departments, the agents, the players themselves who want it in the end of April, it's not going to happen. It's probably going to be either where it was, Mother's Day weekend, which is kind of a pain, or the weekend after that, because that's what Goodell wants, keeps the NFL front and center. And, like you said, the ratings were historic for this year's draft.
And, Tony, I'll tell you who hates it. It's the coaches, because they have 2 less weeks to work with these rookies that are behind the 8-ball anyway, who aren't used to working in an NFL locker room, NFL environment, NFL practices. There's no rookie minicamp this year for the Giants as a perfect example. And these kids are 2 or 3 weeks behind now when they walk in the building. Coaches can't stand it.
of the coaches, but the agents hate it because, you know, the agents are sitting on pins and needles. They don't want to wake up and find out that the player that they represent was arrested because he got into a fight, he got a DUI, he did this, he did that, because really, you know, after the combines and the pro days, and now the pro days, you know, and the middle of April and maybe a few individual workouts, these guys are sitting around doing nothing. You know, basically, you know, if they're not getting out of shape or they're not keeping up with the workouts, and there's the potential there for trouble because they got so much time on their hands. So, like I said, except for Roger Goodell and the PR people in the NFL front office, everybody wants it to go back to the end of April.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, let's get to the guys the Giants did pick in Roger Goodell in the first round. I think to some surprise by Giant fans, but not a ton. He was a name that had kind of popped up the last couple days before the draft. The Giants decide to take Odell Beckham Jr. with Zach Martin on the board, with Aaron Donald on the board. Tony, your thoughts?
Well, I was a little bit surprised. I mean, there's no doubt about Odell Beckham had been gaining a lot of steam in the week before the draft, moving up draft boards. As we talked before the draft, I thought it was going to be Ebron. They went with a different pass catcher. I mean, he basically replaces Hakeem Nicks and brings the element of game-breaking a playmaker as both a receiver and return specialist, which Nicks really never had. He's gonna struggle fighting for those contested balls. He's not the big body receiver that Hakeem Nicks was. I mean, I think it was a good pick. I think bypassing Zach Martin was a good move by them because people thought Zach Martin was the right tackle. I didn't think so. People thought left tackle. You know, the Giants, maybe they don't know what they have there, but they've got William Beattie. You have to see moving forward. I don't think he was that talented of an offensive guard that you're going to take him to the top 12. So I think, you know, between Beckham and Martin, Beckham was the better pick. I would agree with you on Aaron Donald. I think Aaron Donald, there weren't a lot of really good pass rushers in here, especially on the interior defensive line. He was the premier one, but I guess the problem last year for the Giants was their offense. And you want to give Eli Manning more weapons to work with. You want to improve that offense. Odell Beckham was a start in the right direction.
And, Tony, I want to get specifically, we're joined by Tony Pauline, DraftInsiders.net. And, Tony, I want to specifically on Odell Beckham, the one knock on him, you know, he didn't do a lot of bench presses at the combine,
yeah,
and he has struggled in press coverage a little bit. Would you say if you were to pick out two deficiencies, those would be it? What other things is he going to have to work on now at the pro level?
He's going to have to work. That's it. I mean, the problem that I had been hearing with Odell Beckham all along is he's a bit of a diva in the sense that he's not a guy who really likes to practice. He needs to be prodded to get out there on the field really from Monday through Saturday to make himself a great player on Sunday. He has the skill. It's just a matter of doing the little things off the field to make him great. And you just said it. I mean, basically what you said, the fact that he's not very strong, didn't do a lot of bench press, is going to struggle with press coverage, really fits into that narrative that he's got to learn to do those things off the field in practice during the week to really reach his potential. That was the problem that I was hearing with Odell Beckham. He was sort of a diva receiver who is incredibly talented, but really just likes to show up on game day and basically bring it out on the field. Really did not really like to practice too much during the week. That has got to change if he's going to be the type of player the Giants and their fans hope he can be.
Now, as for his strengths, we know he's a great run after the catch guy based, you know, pretty much on his punt and kick return duties. He can catch the ball, make some moves. Can he also beat teams over the top? I know he doesn't have the height, but does he have the speed to get behind defenders as well as make plays with the ball in his hands?
Absolutely. Comes from a family of sprinters, ran in the 4.3s at the combine, also plays to the 4.3s on the football field. You know, there's 40 time and then there's playing time, and Beckham definitely plays to his speed. So, you put him and Victor Cruz out there, you're going to have defensive backs stepping back, you know, a good 3 to 5 yards to guard against the deep pass, which, you know, not only does it help the Giants as far as the vertical game, but it's going to open some things up in the underneath coverage as well as the running game because the safeties and the cornerbacks are going to have to basically move back a little bit to guard against those long throws.
Now, one other thing on Odell Beckham, which I think is interesting, you mentioned how he has to work a little bit harder during the week at practice in the weight room, things of that nature. But by all accounts, he seems to be a pretty intelligent football player, understands the game, is a good route runner, pretty polished in that regard. So it seems like mentally he's pretty prepared, but you think physically he has a little work he has to do?
Well, I mean, physically he's there. He just has to realize that in order to be a great player on Sunday, you just don't show up on Sunday. You got to practice. You really, both on the field, in the weight room, and in the film room from Monday through Saturday to really meet the expectations. I think what happens is, and this is the perfect case with Odell Beckham, is these guys on the college level are so much more athletic, and they're so naturally gifted, it comes easy to them. And it came a little bit easy to Odell Beckham. Again, you know, he comes from a family of sprinters. All of a sudden, now he gets to the next level, it's not going to be as easy. He's not going to be able to get away with not practicing, you know, if he wants to be a good player rather than an also-ran.
Do you think, though, he's pretty polished as a route runner? Do you sense he's a pretty intelligent football player where he can pick things up pretty quickly?
I like everything about his game. I mean, obviously the size and the inability to win out for contested balls and the fact that he's going to lose out in battles, you know, is an issue. But it's a situation where you're not really going to want to put him in that many situations where he's going to be fighting out for those contested balls.
Right.
Overall, yeah, I like his release off the line of scrimmage, the ability to get to top speed, the ability to stretch the field vertically, his route running, his hands. You know, he's fundamentally sound. He's not a body catcher. Extends his hands to catches the pass away from his frame. Quickly transitions from catching the ball to running after the catch. You know, it's one thing to pick up yards running after the catch. You got to show no hesitancy. Once you catch that ball, you got to turn it up the field, which he does. He's very fluid. There's not a lot of wasted movement in his game. Very efficient. So, you know, all the tools are there, which is why he really, you know, made a big leap up draft boards, or he was a hot commodity, you know, entering the draft. People in January and February, even after the combine, thought, well, okay, late first round, probably a guy who's going to go in the high teens, early 20s, and all of a sudden he jumped because I think people said, you know what, this guy's got all the tools. He's very good now. 2 or 3 years down the road, he could be an exceptional receiver.
All right, we're joined by Tony Pauline. Let's jump to the second round, Tony. And this is a guy you put on our radar a week before the draft. You thought he might even jump into the late first round. That's Weston Richburg, the center out of Colorado State. I imagine you probably think the Giants got good value for him at number 43.
Terrific. I mean, I thought if he wasn't a late first-round pick, I'd heard the name, I heard Denver's name associated with him. I heard Green Bay's name associated with him. If he traded down, I heard Jacksonville at the top of round two. You know, this is great value. This fits a need. This is a player who can come in as a rookie and start for the team. This is a guy who has long-term possibilities, can really be the Giants' center moving forward for a long, long time. You know, as I said before the draft, you watch him and he reminds you of a mini Nick Mangold, the all-pro center who plays for that other New York team. He's not a big dominant guy in the middle, but he's smart, he's tough, he's fundamentally sound, he makes great use of, you know, use some football lingo here, body positioning and angles to seal defenders from the action. He's solid on line of scrimmage. He's good getting out of the second level. You can use him in motion. And the fact is you add another piece to help make Eli Manning more effective. So it's a terrific pick by the Giants.
Now, Tony, a popular complaint I got from Giant fans this week was that they didn't wait till the third round to get the offensive lineman, and they wanted the Giants to use their second-round pick on one of the tight ends left on the board. I'll move Jason Moore out of the mix because he's not much of a blocker, but either C.J. Fedorowicz or more specifically Troy Nicholas. Do you think the Giants got more value with Richburg rather than going with one of those potential tight ends in round number two?
I think they could have had Fedorowicz later on, and then there were other, you know, number two. I think Fedorowicz is a number two tight end. I think you could have got that sort of number two tight end later on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the center position was really one of two guys, either Weston Richburg or Marcus Martin. Then it was everyone else who, you know, may eventually develop into starters at the next level, whereas Richburg could be a day one starter. So I don't think, you know, you see more and more importance on the center position. I don't think, and yes, there is a glaring hole at the tight end position for the Giants, but I like Nicholas. I don't think that there was a huge gap between Richburg and Nicholas. And the fact is the Giants could have gotten a good tight end in the third round or even later on. They were not going to get a good center later on.
Tony Pauline, DraftInsiders.net. Let's go through the rest of the draft, Tony. Jay Bromley, defensive tackle out of the Syracuse. This was a bit of a surprise to some people. Obviously, the Giants had him graded differently than a lot of the experts out there. A lot of production at Syracuse, more than 10 sacks, 14 tackles for loss. What did you think about him as the Giants picked him in round number three?
Well, I was surprised, too, because I had him as a last-day pick. He's a try-hard guy. He's a guy who, you know, stands out on film. He's someone who, when he was at the East-West Shrine Game, was really impossible to stop. I mean, they were double-teaming him, blocking him, and he was easily holding his ground, at times overrunning blocks. He doesn't have great size. He's got decent size. The fact is he doesn't show – it's almost a contradiction – when you watch him play, he doesn't look like a great pass rusher. He doesn't have the great athletic numbers to be a pass rusher. But as you said, you know, 10 sacks last year, I believe it was 14 and a half tackles for loss. So he knows how to make plays behind the line of scrimmage. He's just a very good football player. I don't think he has the great upside as opposed to Odell Beckham, which is why he was a third-round pick. And I do think he was drafted a little bit early. But he's the guy who I think you can plug and play, you know, early on from his rookie season. Not, may not be a starter, but he's a guy who can come in certain situations, be used in a rotational system, give the starter a breather. And I think with this pick, you know, the Giants hope to pick up, you know, where they lost out on Linval Joseph and Austin of Marvin Austin of North Carolina, you know, taking those guys in the second day of the draft that never panned out.
Now, Bromwell, you see him starting right away, or maybe not starting, but starting his NFL career, playing more of a three technique. And do you think he can bulk up enough where he could play in the center of that line, too, and be more of a run stopper?
I think the latter. I just, when I watch him on film, I see more of a mauler, you know, small area type guy, a guy that slugs it out in the middle. I don't see the quick, nifty, nimble three technique lineman. It doesn't have the explosion, the change of direction, the ability to pursue plays laterally that you want in a three-technique position. Now, maybe the Giants may try him at that. I just don't see it. I think he's more of your conventional, you know, gap occupier, a guy that's going to, you know, will maul with the next level, hand-to-hand combat, rather than a guy who fires through the open gaps, you know, turns left, turns right at a 90-degree angle and pursues the action as you want in a three-technique player.
We're joined by Tony Pauline, DraftInsiders.net. And one draft pick the Giants fans seem to be most excited about, Tony, besides, obviously, their first-round pick, Odell Beckham Jr., is Andre Williams out of Boston College. We know about the production. We know about the size and the strength. Can he step in right away here and be a 10 to 12 carry a game type of guy here as a complimentary running back?
Yeah, complimentary is the word. And in certain situations, you know, he's very good. You look at his production numbers. You even look at his combine workout, because his combine workout was terrific. And you say, well, why wasn't this guy taken, you know, in the first round or the second round? Basically because he's one-dimensional. He's a downhill between the tackles runner. He's fast. He's got a burst. I mean, he can beat defenders into the open field. He can even run the daylight. But he's very limited in his ability to run east-west. Very limited in his pass-catching ability. In fact, I know the Boston College coaches were really not saying the kindest words about his pass-catching abilities because they're not very good. So he's a rotational guy on short-yarded situations when you want to give the starter a breather and goal line situations. I mean, he is a downhill, grinded-out type of runner. He's good value. There's no doubt about it. He's an intense football player. He's been very productive and very consistent at Boston College. It's just you can't do a lot of different things with Andre Williams.
Now, I know he wasn't asked to pass protect a lot at Boston College, but the Giants seem to think that with his intelligence, his size, and his physicality, that's something he should be able to learn how to do at the pro level.
Yeah, and when you watch it on film, the times that he was asked to stay in and block and pass protection, he did an admirable job of it. You know, it wasn't a situation where it was an Ole blocker. He was letting the guys run by him. I mean, he was giving effort. It's just that he has to get used to it.
All right, let's go through the rest of the day three picks. Tony, give me a quick thumbnail on these guys, what you think their upside is, where you think they fit in right away and in the future. Let's start with Nat Burhey, safety out of San Diego State, the Giants' first fifth-round pick.
Yeah, solid. Does not have the great size speed numbers, 5'10", 190-plus pounds. Ran the mid to high 4.5s at the combine, but a very good football player. He's explosive. He's smart. He keeps the action in front of him. Shows decent range. He's not a straight line guy. He can get outside the numbers and make plays to the flanks. Solid against the run. Solid against the pass. Doesn't make a lot of mental mistakes. Isn't going to blow assignments. And I think he plays with a special teams mentality, which is how he's going to make it. Basically make it as a sixth or seventh defensive back who's going to have to earn his wage on special teams. I thought he was drafted slightly early, but I still like the player.
All right, how about outside linebacker Devon Kennard out of USC? I think it's pretty interesting. He led the team in sacks. He also played middle linebacker for them. How quickly can he contribute? Where do you think he will contribute, and what's his ceiling?
Yeah, I like Kennard more as a 3-4 outside linebacker, but the fact is this, he's a very good football player. I mean, he was supposed to do some good things in 2012, got injured, came back, was really under the radar all season long. I mean, basically a guy that was not rated by scouts coming into the season, had a solid season, a good all-around player, not a guy that stands out on film, not your Khalil Mack or Anthony Barr, but a guy that just consistently makes plays, puts himself to stop the run, does not get beaten coverage, shows some natural pass rushing skills. I think he'll fit in as sort of a situational pass rusher, sort of a do-it-all type of guy that, you know, maybe jack of all trades, master of none, but will contribute in a variety of ways as well as on special teams. Don't be surprised, John fans, if Kennard makes your active roster and finds ways to produce, doesn't put up eye-popping numbers, but it just has a solid, consistent rookie season, especially for a fifth-round choice. That was a good selection by the Giants.
And their final pick was round six. They did not own a seventh-round pick. They picked Notre Dame cornerback Bennett Jackson. When Jerry Reese talked about him, he's only been playing DB for a couple years. They seem to think he has some raw tools that they might be able to develop in the secondary.
And that's it. I had him rated as a sixth-round pick, so he went exactly where I thought. He's more of a size-speed guy, very unpolished. A guy who needs to work on his press coverage, needs to do a better job finding the ball when it's in the air. You know, he's maybe, if he makes the team, he's more of a zone type of dime back who's going to have to play on special teams. Worst case scenario, maybe you put him on the practice squad and try and develop his skills for the future. You know, again, very good athlete, has the size and the speed, must learn to become a football player now.
All right, Tony, we'll get to the undrafted free agent in a second. We're joined by Tony Pauline from DraftInsiders.net. Is it fair to say, especially from rounds 2 to 5, Tony, that the Giants seem to really focus more on drafting, you know, football players, smart guys that have a lot of experience and less of a focus on size, speed, combine numbers? Do you think that's a fair characterization of what they decide to do in this year's draft?
Yeah, taking Andre Williams out of that narrative, I would agree with you.
Okay.
I mean, Bromley, Bear, even Kennard, I mean, they're not athletes. They're not combine warriors. They're not, you know, your Olympians, your Taylor Mays type guys, but they're very productive football players. I think the one thing that you got to like about all those players, even if we throw Andre Williams into the mix, is they're intelligent. I mean, they don't have mental breakdowns. They don't make stupid plays on the field. You don't see them on film. Now, granted, they're going to be taking it to the next level, but still, you're seeing more and more of this because, as I said, I was down at the Eagles complex on Saturday, and more they're going away from these guys that put up Olympian-type numbers at the combine to guys that understand, guys that are smart, guys that, you know, basically are instinctive is the term that's thrown around. And that's what I see with the Giants' later-round picks.
Tony Pauline, DraftInsiders.net. If you want to give me a quick nugget on each one of these undrafted free agents, you tell me you like some of these guys. How about Kelce Quarles out of South Carolina? At one point, he could have been a third-round pick if this was drafted 2 or 3 months ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you talked about Bromley being the three-technique tackle. There's your three-technique tackle. I mean, the fact is Quarles was a guy who really was overshadowed by Jadeveon Clowney, obviously, but he's a quick, explosive interior guy. He can make plays up the field. He can change down the line of scrimmage and make plays on the ball. He's good in all areas. He's got to learn to mature as a person. He's got to learn to take it up a notch on the field, take it up a notch in the practice facility. He's got a lot of skill. He's got a lot of upside. It's just a matter of, is he going to make football a priority? So that was an outstanding signing by the Giants.
I know you liked safety Thomas Gordon out of Michigan.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of Stevie Brown. Didn't have a good senior campaign, but when I watched him as a sophomore and junior, Stevie Brown was a name that came to my mind when I watched him play, because remember, Stevie Brown, before he played linebacker as a senior at Michigan, was a terrific safety, you know, more of a downhill between the numbers type safety. And Gordon has that type of possibility. Didn't live up to expectations last year, but watch him. He's a guy who wouldn't be surprised if he makes it to the next level.
And, of course, the linebacker out of Notre Dame, Dan Fox, had a ton of production as a senior, leading them in tackles.
Not only a senior, I mean, he was a very good player for 3 years at Notre Dame. For some reason, he just kind of fell under the radar, was kind of the unmentioned guy, and I don't even understand it from the scouting community. I mean, he was a very good football player, had a terrific pro day, probably should have gotten an invite to the combine.
Wow.
I mean, as a guy who you can line up at outside linebacker, you can line him up in the middle, you can do a variety of things with him. He's not great in coverage, he's more of an in-the-box, up-the-field type of guy, but he's not going to embarrass himself in coverage. Plays with a special teams mentality. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, could make it as your sixth or seventh linebacker special teams player. This was a tremendous pick. I've been one of the bigger Dan Fox fans. I thought he probably should have been in the late rounds of the draft. I think he's very underrated. Now he's going to come with a chip on his shoulder. You know, for all intents and purposes, you know, this could be the Giants' seventh-round pick, even though they didn't have one, along with Quarles. They got two guys who probably had draftable grades that fell out that they signed as undrafted free agents.
And two defensive linemen. I know you like Ethan Manimaliuna and, of course, Kerry Wynn of Richmond.
Yeah, Molly Yuna, if I can say his name, I deserve an award for that, for the way I put your names. But, you know, again, he fits into that, you know, that Bromley Bear type of, you know, he's not a great athlete, but he's a stout, tough guy. He's a very good football player. Doesn't have great size, but he plays strong. You know, he's not overbearing, but he holds his ground and occupies the gaps. He's a guy who's going to, you know, add some competition. And when the kid from Richmond, he's more of a developmental guy. Solid pass rusher, had some injuries as a senior, was expected to do more, but he's explosive. He flashes on film. He's more of your practice squad type of player that, you know, you can develop down the road. Could be a very good defensive end in a 4-3 alignment.
I have to ask you about Emmanuel Dickey, one of our callers, Charlie in Portland, Maine, has been calling me about him for about 2 months. What are your thoughts on him coming in? Obviously not a ton of production at Georgia Tech.
No, I mean, in that Georgia Tech system, they don't really produce very good linemen on either side, or you know, they don't put up big numbers. They get some good linebackers. They get some good receivers on occasion. Once in a while, a ball carrier. I'd be surprised if he makes it past the 60-man roster.
All right, and finally, one guy that's rumored, I should bring up, that maybe will become official in the next couple of days, Tony, is Xavier Grimble, the tight end at USC. Your thoughts on him?
You know, he's sort of a tweener. Was surprised that he entered the draft. He doesn't have great size. He's not a great blocker. He's a solid pass catcher, but he ran 5 seconds at his pro day. So, you know, what is he? He's not a guy that's going to stretch the seam at the tight end position, and he really is not a guy you're going to put on the field on 3rd and 2 and be used as a blocker. So I think it's a good signing. To bring in some competition in camp. Maybe he can turn out to be your third tight end. He's a very good pass catcher. There's no doubt about it. When you watch him on film, you say, oh, good pass-catching tight end. But you watch him on film, he's slow. And then during his pro day, when he was barely able to crack 5 seconds in the 40, it just confirmed what everyone thought.
And I abhor this question, but the fans online want me to ask you, so I'll ask you anyway, Tony. Give me a grade on the draft. I think it's nonsense, but do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and I hate giving letter grades, but, you know, I'm going to say somewhere between, I'm going to say a B. I'm going to say a B because I thought it was going to be Ebron. They didn't have Ebron, so they took Odell Beckham. I would have preferred they took an Aaron Donald at that point. I understand why they took Beckham. Love the Richburg pick. I think after that, Bromley, some of those other guys, they took a little bit earlier, but they're good football players. I think what the Giants are going to get out of this draft is they're going to get good football players. They're not going to have Pro Bowl type guys. They're not going to have guys that, you know, have you know, double digit sacks, or you know, you're not going to get a safety that's going to have 80 tackles. Just very good situational role players, which is also needed.
Tony, do me a favor. Take a vacation. You've worked your butt off. The draft's over. Take a little break before you start delving into 2015, all right?
That'll be about 2 weeks' time, but thank you. I'll make sure I tell my wife that.
Tony, fantastic job. Thanks so much again, and we'll talk to you down the road, all right?
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so that was Tony Pauline with John Schmelk. So glad you could join us. Lance Meadow with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. You can use hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Follow and interact with me at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. So some interesting feedback on all of the Giants draft picks and some of the undrafted free agents that they brought into the mix. I know a number of you have been waiting on the line. So without further ado, let's head to those phone lines. And we will start with Rocky in Panama City. Rocky, what's happening?
What's going on, Lance?
Doing well, Rocky. How's everything with you? What you got?
Oh, a few things I wanted to piggyback off of. I think 2 shows ago, I heard one of the callers complaining about the undrafted free agents we were signing with and offensive guys. And actually, to me, it was nice to see them addressing the special teams. And I know they're labeled defensive guys, but they're bringing them in to show up the special teams, you know. And,
Well, I think that's one angle, but I also think that they've done some work on special teams during the course of the offseason with some of the established free agents. But you're right, a lot of these undrafted guys, if they're going to make the team or they're going to make an impact on this squad, I absolutely agree with you, Rocky. It's going to have to come via special teams because they pretty much have their starters, at least in the front seven, well-established by now.
Right, and I remember everybody questioning the depth at offensive tackle. And I just don't really see it, because that's why I like the Richburg signing so good, because if they be, we could shift Schwartz or Jerry to right tackle and bring Pugh to the left side and let Richburg play guard if we had to, you know.
Well, but that would be following last year's script all over again, and it would become a game of musical chairs, and there would be no consistency in terms of one guy playing next to another. First of all, Justin Pugh is coming off a very productive season at right tackle. I would not be a fan of moving him now to left when he's all of a sudden built some comfort there. Richburg, you drafted because he's going to be potentially your center of the future, and that's where he's had all of his playing time at Colorado State. He's durable. He stayed healthy. He played through a finger injury, so the kid's got some toughness. I think the last thing the Giants need to do is get creative and start shuffling guys out of their positions.
Yeah, I agree. But I'm saying if Adrian makes us have to do that, I like our chances if we do have to start playing that game all over. But I'm a big fan of the Jepson pickup from South Carolina.
I'm sorry, say that again. I didn't hear you.
That Chelsea kid from South Carolina, I thought that was a really good pickup, because actually what I was looking at on Walter Football, they didn't even have Bromley in the top 25, and he was, like, ranked 16, I think. So even if Bromley doesn't pan out, we got another guy that can still play that three technique, you know?
Well, Casey Crowles, as Tony mentioned in the interview with John, and as has been well documented, you know, he didn't get a lot of publicity because he played alongside Jadeveon Clowney. But if you take a look at his numbers, he actually outproduced Clowney. And I understand Clowney was dealing with some injuries over the course of the season, but Crowles had the ability to get to the quarterback, and he had the ability to stop the run. So to get him as an undrafted free agent, I think, is certainly a big plus, but he's got to prove it in camp, and he's going to have to adjust to the competition here and try to flourish. But it never hurts to add another weapon in the mix, because if anything, it brings out better talent from the established guys that you already invested in.
Right. As far as from a production standpoint, was it him and Bromley as productive as Donald? Like double-digit sacks on the tackle spot?
In that vicinity. I mean, the numbers are similar, but I would say that Aaron Donald has just been a little bit more consistent, the level of competition he's gone up against. I know Crowles played in the SEC, which is arguably the best conference, but I think that there is somewhat of a drop-off when you're talking about Aaron Donald versus the other two guys that you mentioned. I mean, Donald, to me, is in a slightly larger tier, which is above these guys. But that doesn't mean that you can't get productivity out of a guy like Crowles, assuming that he steps up in training camp. You know, I shy away from just looking at numbers, Rocky. It's very easy to look at a guy's college career and say, oh, well, he has this amount of sacks, he has this amount of tackles for loss, so it's automatically going to translate. We've seen, for example, quarterbacks, and I know I'm talking about a different position, who have had great college careers, and then it doesn't pan out in the NFL. So I think the last thing that we should get over caught up with is, hey, this guy's got X amount of sacks, so you know he's going to be a force that you don't want to mess with come the NFL game.
Okay, and one last thing, and I'll let the other callers chime in. I agree with Shakes. When we got Aaron Curry last year, I just had a gut feeling that was going to pan out, and I kind of was hoping we might could bring him in and give him one more shot. What do you think about that, Lance?
I think they're pretty much moving on, and I think Aaron Curry's moving on because he pretty much has admitted that he's ready to retire, if not making it official. So I don't think at this point that's any more an option. But appreciate the phone call, Rocky. They've got other linebackers. It may not be guys that jump off the page, but here's the thing. Why do you want to turn back to a guy that has been injury-prone during the course of his career and really has never lived up to expectations? If anything, you go in a different direction. There's no point to recycling and revisiting. If that was the case, then you can make the argument the Giants should have brought back the majority of the free agents that were on last year's team. But that doesn't make any sense when you finish 7-9. Why would you bring back the same nucleus? So if you're looking to set a different tone and a new culture and you have a brand new offensive coordinator, you clearly want to mix it up at this point. It would make no sense to me to bring back guys who have not flourished in your old system. Why bring them back to expect different results with perhaps new coaches in place? All right, let's head back to the lines. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. And we'll go to Co, who is representing Giants Nation. Co, what's happening?
How you doing, Lance?
Doing well, Cole. How's everything with you? What you got? What's on your mind?
Oh, man, we looking good this year, man. We look real good.
Well, so far they've been extremely aggressive in terms of the offseason moves. In the draft, the goal was obviously to supplement and complement what they already brought in via free agency. And as long as the competition plays out in training camp, let the best man win. I think that they got a lot of bodies that they brought in, and this should hopefully bring out the best talent.
Yeah, I'd like to give a shout-out to Mr. Mayor and Mr. Reese. Great job they did on the offseason and draft.
Well, I would agree. I mean, I think that they address their areas of need, but these guys still need to pan out. I mean, I don't think that the work is done. We've got to see what the competition brings out. And the other thing is you hope that guys that have had some injury history are able to survive throughout the course of training camp because there are still a few red flags here or there.
Yeah, I understand that too. But at the same time, our wide receiver crew is it's got to be one of the nicest wide receiver crew in the league right now. You figure you got like four Victor Cruzes on a team, pretty much.
Well, you have speed. You don't necessarily have a great deal of size. I mean, Odell Beckham is going to play outside as opposed to Victor Cruz in the slot. Then the other guys that you have is the compliments. You know, Mario Manningham obviously is back with the organization coming off that knee injury, so you hope that he can return to full form. And him being here again, I mean, it gives him comfort because he knows the facility, he knows some of the coaches. But remember, they're going to have a brand-new offense, so it's not as if he's ahead of the game compared to some of the other wide receivers. Jarrell Jernigan flourished at the end of last year. You hope he can pick up where he left off. And Reuben Randle, to me, he really has an opportunity to shine this season. You know, Akeem Nicks is gone. He can have a much bigger role. If he shows that he's a more consistent receiver, I mean, he can really make a name for himself in this league.
Well, we got at least four receivers that require double coverage.
Well, that may be a bit of a stretch, though. I mean, I don't know if I'd go the degree code to say that all of them automatically call for double coverage. I don't know if everybody's running towards Mario Manningham and Jarrell Jernigan. Victor Cruz, I think, is well established for double teams. Odell Beckham Jr., remember, he's only a rookie. Let's see what he does before all of a sudden he earns the respect of a double team. And Reuben Randle, to me, has to be a little bit more consistent before the opposition all of a sudden looks at him as a threat each and every contest.
I mean, we could go back to Troy and watch Jernigan's. Jernigan's is starting to look like he did at Troy that last year. Last season, at the end of the season, he started to look like what he looked like on his highlights from the Troy highlights when he played college. So,
well, I'll give you that, but here's this, Coach. Three games, you're telling me, automatically means that he deserves double teams? I mean, let's put things in perspective here. It took him long enough to get to this point. Now, part of it was playing time. The other part was health. But, you know, I mean, there was a relatively lengthy learning curve when it came to Jarrell Jernigan. So I think the jury's still out. I think he did show a great deal of potential, and he took advantage of his playing time. And, listen, that's a positive, and I think that he's going to have a great deal of motivation coming into camp this year. But before we all of a sudden crown these guys, I think we need to see a little bit more on the resume.
No, that's understood at the same time. But at the same time, you can see how the NFC East, they went corners and safeties real big because they're nervous about something. And I know it's this wide receiver core we got on our team.
Well, I think they're nervous because of the trend across the NFL. I don't know if they're necessarily nervous about the New York Giants receiving core. I think all teams want big corners because they look at what the Seattle Seahawks just accomplished. Richard Sherman and Brandon Browner and Byron Maxwell, all of those guys were well over 6 feet tall. So if anything, the Seahawks have set the tone, and it is basically a copycat league, such as the two double-set tight end formations that we've seen across the league. So I think it's just a statement of what the rest of the league is doing, not necessarily what the rest of the NFC East is doing.
Okay, that's good. That's good. And at the same time, I like to say that was a good pick with Andre Williams.
I thought that was a great value pick. I would agree with you. To get a Heisman Trophy finalist in the fourth round is great value.
It's not even all that. He's a good pick because what he does is he brings everybody in the box. So if he's bringing everybody in the box and we got those crazy receivers, oh, man, I can't wait till this season start, man.
Cole, I hear you. There's reason to be excited. Listen, appreciate the phone call. I want to try to get to some other callers this morning. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Piggybacking real quickly off of Cole's last point about Andre Williams, what was interesting about during his collegiate career, they brought a lot of guys to the box, as Cole mentioned, and they lined up most of the time the tight end, extra offensive lineman, all across, and Williams pretty much had to deal with a great deal of pressure that was coming from every direction, and he still managed to pick up big chunks of yardage. So that says a lot about how the fact that he doesn't necessarily need creative formations. He can be a bulldozer, and he can find his way through holes, whether it be on the inside and the outside. So I think it's great value from that perspective, given his experience. I also think, given the fact that he can handle a big workload, is another positive. A lot of people say, well, you know, he wasn't really used as a receiver. The Giants, to me, have a variety of different running backs. So just because Andre Williams is not known for catching passes doesn't mean that he still can't be productive on first and second down, and you bring somebody else in on third down. What running back system do you know in this league, especially in this day and age, that relies solely on one back? Normally, you have a variety of different running backs. You have your big bruiser, your goal line back, you have your change of pace back, and you could also have your receiving back. I think we saw that, for example, with the New Orleans Saints, if you use them, with Mark Ingram, with Darren Sproles. I know Sproles now left for Philadelphia, and you could choose tons of other examples. How about the New England Patriots? They had a three-headed monster. Vereen, LeGarrette Blount, all of those guys had different roles. So just because Andre Williams wasn't called upon to catch the football, I'm sure the Giants could find somebody else that could catch the football, specifically a guy like David Wilson, and last time I checked, Rashad Jennings is not too bad of a receiver as well, coming over from Oakland. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Andrew in New Jersey. Andrew, what's happening?
I agree. The running back, Williams, I saw him on Giants.com. The rookies arrive, and the first shot of him walking in, I was like, oh, that must be the linebacker. He's got these massive, massive arms, and he definitely looks like he can move the pile. He was up for the Heisman, and we hit on Brandon Jacobs, a big back, but we missed when we picked Heisman Trophy, Ron Dane, and Michael Cox, I think, will be a good one. But I don't know if you remember George Rogers. We drafted him like in the 80s. You remember him, George? That was before your time, Heisman Trophy winner from a big-time school, but he turned out to be a bust. Do you remember him?
No, I do know who you're talking about. But, you know, I mean, listen, comparing these guys is great. I don't love the conversation about looking back at different decades. I think everybody else stands on their own. The bottom line is you look at Williams' resume, it speaks volumes of the work he's done. They need a big bruiser, and it's a good fit for the Giants system. Time will tell whether or not he's going to pan out. To say, you know, previous Heisman Trophy winners haven't necessarily flourished, hey, that's great. Right now, I think the Giants are more concerned about the present as opposed to what took place a few decades ago.
What I think is with Ron Dane and the other guy, that they're soft. Like, they had size and speed, and when they transferred to the pros, there's faster guys, big guys, and they didn't have the toughness. So I see this guy as the opposite. Like, he has the toughness that, like, a Ron Dane didn't have, so I'm excited. And also,
well, keep in mind, Andrew, you know, Dane was also a first-round pick. So, you know, expectations were much higher. Andre Williams, a fourth-round pick, even though they share that Heisman Trophy connection, you still are not putting as much pressure on the shoulders of Williams because he's coming in as a guy that dropped and is a fourth-round pick, whereas opposed to Ron Dane was expected to really move the chains given the fact that he was a first-round pick.
Excellent point. Tyrone Wheatley never panned out either. But I think I just see like a similarity that with the more of the bruiser type guys, I think they're more likely to make it because the other guys are like fast and finesse type guys, even though they're big. And then when you got a guy like Herschel Walker or, you know, Jerome Bettis, someone that could, because I remember Ron Dane, he seemed insulted that people were comparing him coming out of college to Jerome Bettis. the guy from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Jerome Bettis,
said, well, I'm faster than him. But he didn't have the heart. He didn't have the muscle, you know, the power that Jerome had. So that's why I'm impressed with this guy, because I think these backs that are tough, they could translate into the NFL. I remember in 2007, Derek Ward, I think, was the back that we had. And even Amon Bradshaw, even though he was small and he was fast and everything, he was still physically a bruiser despite his small size. So I'm very impressed with his toughness and his strength, and I think it was a great pick. And with the tight ends, people are worried about the tight ends, but the fact is that, you know, if you sign Cruz and you sign offensive linemen and Eli's contract, you're going to have to skimp somewhere else. If you sign Martellus Bennett, who was a good tight end blocking and receiving, then you're not going to be able to sign Cruz or someone else on the offensive line. But I think with the wide receivers being very good or dominant and a good offensive line, as long as the tight ends are good blockers, like Cruz and the new wide receiver, they help the other receivers get open by drawing double coverage. So that also will help the tight ends and the fullback and the running back. So as long as they're decent receivers and good blockers, then I'm satisfied with the tight ends, because I know there's a salary cap and you can't sign everyone. But what are your thoughts? Thanks for taking my call on the tight ends. I'm not really as worried as everyone else.
Well, I'm not worried as well, Andrew, and appreciate the phone call. I've been saying, like a broken record, for weeks, and I'll continue to emphasize it until these guys and this coaching staff proves me wrong, that I think the Giants coming into this offseason were still of the mindset that based on their track record, they can develop somebody internally, and they're willing to give this group another shot, as opposed to making a big splash on the financial side of things, as Andrew just alluded to. Now, they could have went the route of the draft, and they could have brought somebody in too, and that would have not necessarily broken open the piggy bank. Piggybacking, though, off of Andrew's point, connected to the tight end situation, and Co brought this up too earlier in the program, if you have depth at wide receiver, and we don't know what Ben McAdoo's system is going to look like. For all we know, he may utilize four wide receiver sets, three wide receiver sets very often. He may put a running back out on the line and use him as a receiver. So, you know, it's very premature to say the tight end is going to be so integral to this system because of how the tight end was used in previous regimes, and therefore the Giants need a star-studded guy who's going to spread the wealth and stretch the field. I think right now we're under the assumption it's going to be a continuation of the Giants' personnel in previous years. If they lean heavily, let's say, on four wide receivers, you know, then the tight end doesn't really have as great of an influence as they did in previous years. And as long as the wide receivers are making plays and they're drawing attention to themselves, it doesn't have to be double coverage, just they're winning their one-on-one battles, guys are going to have open opportunities. The key to me is you want to have tight ends in the mix who can block and want to block, have the desire to block, and don't mind getting down and dirty and physical at the line of scrimmage. I don't know if they're necessarily right now, based on the personnel that Ben McAdoo is going to turn to, in need of a Martellus Bennett in this offense right now. And I understand that there's a lot of other offenses in this league that rely heavily on tight ends. And you look at the Saints and you say, well, look at New Orleans. New Orleans puts out tons of wide receivers, puts out a tight end. You know, Jimmy Graham, I mean, he's fighting to be considered a wide receiver. He's not even fighting to be considered a tight end. There's so many hybrid players right now in this league, it may be unfair to even refer to them as a tight end because they're used so much as a wide receiver. There's potential in this group. These guys don't necessarily jump off the page. But if they could get some productivity out of them, consistency, where you know you can throw them out as an extra offensive lineman and they can also serve as a security blanket, then we're going to look back and we're going to say, you know, it wasn't necessary for the Giants to go out and make a big splash, or it wasn't necessary for the Giants to use an early draft pick or reach on a guy just because perhaps on paper they had a need. It's easy to throw out some of the previous names that the Giants have had within their tight end system who have flourished. And I understand maybe it's too convenient to continually point at that, but You know, I've looked back at the Packers roster. Ben McAdoo, to me, has groomed a number of guys. And I went back and forth on Twitter with a number of you. Donald Lee, Jermichael Finley, Andrew Corliss. Don't get so caught up in the receptions and the yards. Look at their overall play. And I understand if you go to profootballreference.com, you're not necessarily going to get a good glimpse of their overall play. But these guys became blockers. And they weren't known as blockers during their college career. They became as reliable security blankets. They weren't necessarily guys that were going to wow you, but they got the job done. Now, even look at how they utilized a guy like John Kuhn, who was a fullback slash running back. He was another player that was integral to their success. He was a guy that had a huge track record coming into the NFL. I think at this point, you should have faith in McAdoo being able to continue what Mike Pope was able to do. I think there's enough evidence, there's enough of a resume there to say, hey, let's see what he could do given what he was able to get out of some talent in Green Bay. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow here with you this morning on Big Blue Kickoff Live. So glad you could join us. We'll get to more of your phone calls. You can also use hashtag Giants Chat to send out your tweets. Follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's head back to the lines, and let's not waste any more time. Let's set off the fireworks this morning. Ann is in Richmond. Ann, what's happening?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Ann. What's on your mind this morning?
Good morning. I knew you would go through your long, lengthy speech. And I'm a paying customer, and it's about keeping the customer happy. And as a fan, I'm unhappy. And before you strike me off the line, as a paying customer, I'm entitled to say what I want to say. I'm at home today. I'm working from home, but I'm on break, and I'm drinking my tea. So let me get quick, rapid fire. I give the Giants front office an F. I think this organization right now is going downhill, and it's going downhill fast. I think we're going off an old reputation of it used to be a good organization. I will tell you why. First of all, we went into the offseason knowing that the offense did not score points. The NFL has opened up for the offense to score points. I want to see points. And I'm not seeing that. They knew we needed a tight end. I wanted that big tight end from Notre Dame that was out there, Troy Nicholas. I knew he wouldn't be hired. Jerry Reese should be fired. I want Tom Coughlin out of here. He has nothing left to offer. And I really think a lot of these guys, they call up in here, particularly I'm going to address Steve from D.C. I listened to him. I was at work on Monday. And the way he came up calling and complaining about the quarterback, I find it absurd. Let me tell you, I don't think any quarterback deserves $20 million a year. But it's an excuse that you can't find quality players, especially in the tight end position, because you have to pay Eli Manning's salary. That's a lot. Peyton Manning gets a large salary. John Elway is doing it over there, bringing great players in there. Tony Romo's salary is bigger than Eli's, yet they have managed to maintain Jason Witten for the last 10 years down.
And what have the Cowboys done over the last few seasons? Have they won Super Bowls?
I want to see points, and I think it's a shame. Eli Manning has 2 years left on his contract. It's a shame that Jerry Reese did not go out and get him a big white tight end, and I'm going to quote, a big white tight end, because they seem to play the position better, and I don't want to hear about the guy out in San Francisco, Vernon Davis. He's good. Even the mobile quarterbacks have tight ends. Rather, it's the guy out there in San Francisco. He has a tight end.
Oh, yeah. Well, who does Seattle have? Ann, who does Seattle have?
I know, but you can't win in this league unless you have a tight end.
Ann, who does Seattle have? Ann, excuse me. I asked you a question. Who does Seattle have? Name me their tight end. You just said every mobile quarterback has a tight end.
I don't really know his name, but I saw him.
Well, do your homework if you're going to call up the show, Ann. Ann, hold on. If you're going to make a point.
Look at you arguing with me. I'm a client. You're supposed to treat me right. I pay. Let me tell you now. The coverage that the New York Giants have is because the coverage is built around the Mannings. We all know that. Okay? And that's why the Giants put him out there. I think it's wrong. I think I'm sitting there looking at the draft. I only saw day one and two. I saw NYG, no trades. I'm sitting there looking at, okay, Cleveland is constantly making trades. I'm looking at the Raiders making trades. The Giants in the offseason. I'm going to get at Dre Reese because Steve and DC and all these other African American men, they call up here because he's black, and that's why they protect him. And you know what? The last time I checked, this is a free country. And I'll say what I please because I'm a paying customer. And at this point, I'm not happy.
I didn't know you have to pay to listen to this show. That's news to me. But I'm glad you clarified that.
When the Giants play on Monday night, they're going to get creamed. Matt Staff is sitting on with all those weapons. I want to see points. And I don't see any points. And let me tell you now, Tom Coughlin, I knew he was going to get a big running back. And the guy isn't big. He's 5'11". He has no hands. And I think that getting the receiver that they drafted at 12 from LSU, I think that was a reach. I didn't see them get Taylor Lewan. I wanted him.
And you just said, hold on, and you just said you want more points and you're criticizing them for taking a potential explosive wide receiver.
I want the passing game. And let me say this.
He's supposed to help the passing game. And you're going in circles. And hold on here, okay? You know, I know you want to set the tone for the program. And we're going to give you a little bit more airtime because the callers are dying to hear what you have to say. And you know what? And you're absolutely killing me. I mean, I'm getting a headache this morning. Jeez. Unbelievable. She's going on and on and on and on and on. There's no point being made. First of all, let's cross out each and every point that she made because it's absolutely ridiculous. It gets comical after a point. I know Steve in D.C. is exploding online. Steve, we'll give you an opportunity to go back at Ann in D.C. I'm glad she's enjoying her tea this morning. The voice was all animated and worked up. I'm really glad that she made the time to call in on this Friday morning when John was away and I had the opportunity to slide in because my morning just got a whole lot brighter. The point that she's making is that the Giants need to score points. The last time I checked, the Seattle Seahawks just won the Super Bowl. What were the Seattle Seahawks known for? They were known for playing defense. So it is misleading to say that in this league, you need to light up the scoreboard to win. The top offenses, the last time I checked in the NFL, did not win the Super Bowl this season. I understand Denver got to the Super Bowl. New Orleans had a great offense. They came up short. Seattle won with defense. How did Seattle shut down Denver? Seattle did it with defense. They had arguably the best secondary in the NFL. They had rotational pass rushers that they used in the front seven. And the Giants addressed some of their needs in the offseason. But everyone is so caught up in this tight end position as if this tight end position is going to make or break this Giants team. We have no idea what Ben McAdoo's system is going to look like. Apparently, Ann knows what Ben McAdoo's system is going to look like. I mean, how could I overlook that? My goodness, what an oversight on my part. I mean, she's clearly in the coaching meetings. We should have had her on as an expert when everyone was speculating about what the offense was going to look like. Ben McAdoo had a powwow with Ann in D.C. Richmond, excuse me. We're changing the locations now, too. How lovely. Unbelievable. She's a paying customer. I'm glad we clarified that. Last time I checked, Big Blue Kickoff Live, you just go to Giants.com and you listen. But Ann in D.C. apparently has to pay a price to call up each and every morning. And she's different than the rest of the listeners on this program, too. I've never heard another caller call up and claim that he or she is a paying customer, therefore we have to listen to utter stupidity. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. At Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Oh, boy. What a tone we have set for this program. Let's see who can follow up. Ann in D.C., Richmond, whatever you want to name it. Let's go to Rashawn in Georgia. Rashawn, what's happening?
Oh, man, I knew I was coming in next. This is terrible. Oh, I was laughing, man. I'm sorry. I almost forgot all my points.
You got huge shoes to fill here, Rashawn. Expectations are through the roof. So, you know, I mean, get yourself, you know, together. Get some composure here. Be very careful with the words you select because, I mean, you really got to dig deep to follow that act.
Yeah, she needs some medicine. But
I think the pharmacy ran out of the medicine, to be honest with you.
She needs to sit on a leather couch somewhere. But I just basically want to talk about the draft. It was a beautiful draft. Everybody's giving it a B. I give it a B as well. I'm with you. Please stop harboring on this tight end thing. Please. We got able bodies, young kids that, you know, they're gonna get coached up. They're going to catch the ball. They fired Mike Polk for a reason because they got another guy that can do the same thing or maybe even better. We don't know. But I've seen the production. It looks good out in Green Bay. Last time I checked.
He produced a number of good tight ends out there.
Yeah, so everybody just calm down, you know, take a drink, relax. The Grimble kid looks like a plus. Look, he's not going to be a, you know, burner speed guy, but I'm looking for a Jason Witten. I'm not really looking for nobody to go across the field, in the middle of the field, you know, stretching it out. We got dynamic wide receivers that's running in the 4-4s, man. We don't need that. We just need somebody to sit there with the big glove and catch it when he needs it. That's pretty much the deal.
I agree. They don't necessarily need a game changer at that position. They just need solid production, a guy that's going to come in, he's going to make plays, he's going to have the desire to block. You use Martellus Bennett as an example, Rashawn. You know, he backed up Jason Witten before he came to the Giants. He made plays here. He had the desire to block. Wasn't necessarily anything flashy about him, but you knew when he went out there, he was going to be a big target, he was going to be a security blanket, and he went out and played hard. Unfortunately, he had to deal with the knee injury, but they can get another guy like that, and he could perhaps carve out a key role for himself on this squad.
Absolutely, absolutely. They solidified the defense. The offensive line, of course, you know, there's some questions there with the tackle situation. I think guard, we're going to be good because we got a Swiss Army knife and the second-round pick, Rich Berg. I mean, but, you know, come on. Let's get serious here. The whole situation with this deal is Eli and him hearing those footsteps and him getting his feet together. Because if he actually doesn't get all of that, all of his mechanics together, yeah, he's going to be throwing it in the stands again. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is, you know, they're going to protect this kid. But this kid got to get it out. He got to actually bring the professionalism back. We want the elite and Eli. We need it.
And
got to have it.
And, Rashawn, that's a fair assessment of last season. I think we get caught up in the offensive line play and the game of musical chairs, and it goes without saying that was a big reason why Eli Manning struggled. However, at the same time, it is fair to point the finger slightly in his direction and say, hey, you know, Eli made some bad decisions last season. Eli tried to press the envelope. I don't think anyone would sit here and argue. So he has to return to his old self, but at the same time, the offensive line needs to give him time to survey the field. It's a joint force here at this point.
Yeah, and I think at this point at the juncture, everybody's assuming what the offense is going to look like. We all know that what we were terrible at, we're going to be better at, because if this was going to be another Gilbride stretching the field, he wouldn't have came here. They would have just kept Gilbride and did the same thing. This kid is going to make sure that Eli gets the ball out of his hands fast. He's going to make sure we have a screen game. He's going to make sure the running back can actually catch the ball out the backfield, because these are dangerous weapons. The reason why Wilson is hurt is because he's not that between-the-tackle guy. You got to get this kid in space.
You do. You need to get him an open opportunity. You need to get the blocking up the field, because that's where he could do the most damage. I think you could say the same thing about a guy like Odell Beckham Jr. You know, you don't necessarily have to stretch the field with him. You give him a short pass, he has good blocking up the field. I think that he could take it the distance, too. They've got playmakers on this team, but, you know, they can only do so much themselves. The blocking needs to be in the right spot. It's the same thing on special teams, Rashawn. Guy like Trindon Holliday, I mean, he could take it to the house each and every play, but you've got to have some solid blocking up the field by the rest of the unit.
Absolutely, and I think they actually got some young guys in there. I'm only worried about tackle because Charlie Brown's a little shaky, and I don't know about Brewer.
Coming off an injury. It's fair to question that, but they – obviously, and not Brewer, excuse me, Beattie, rather, I think you were referring to, Rashawn, in terms of him.
No, I'm talking about the back. I'm more talking about the depth. I'm not actually worried about what Beattie is going to do because they paid him, so he's already here. You know, I'm talking about just in case something happens to him, like, where's the depth there? There's not much depth there.
Well, the rookies that they brought in, clearly in Richburg, he could play center. They're going to rely on veterans at the tackle spot. I think they brought in a number of guys, and they come with some question marks, injury history, losing starting jobs. In an ideal world, you hope that Beattie is ready to go. If Beattie's ready to go, I think it takes the pressure off the depth chart. If Beattie's not ready to go, you know, then obviously you need to lean on some of the veterans, and then you hope that by week two or week three, Beattie is reacclimated to the system so that you can slide him back in and then you don't have to continue to play a game of musical chairs. But let's see what happens. You know, they always have room to pick up another free agent. They have room to pick up another undrafted free agent. I think there's a lot more to this offseason before we close the door on this roster.
Absolutely. I appreciate your call, man. And, you know, hopefully, man, the rest of your day goes extremely well, because that was terrible.
Sounds good, Rashawn. Don't worry about me. I've got plenty of experience with Ann in Richmond, D.C., so, I mean, don't lose any sleep for me. I do appreciate the support here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Two other things I do want to address regarding Ann's phone call, and a number of you are reacting on Twitter, and I want to not necessarily apologize for her because, she speaks for herself, but she did make a lot of racial connotations, which I didn't necessarily approve. And I don't think anyone here in the Giants organization approves of that. And it sure rubbed a lot of people, I could tell, on Twitter the wrong way, where she was referring to tight ends and also our other callers. There's no room for that on this program. Let me make that very clear. So take what she says, put it through one ear, and let it go immediately out the other ear. Don't read into it. Don't get worked up, if anything. The other thing that was quite comical about her phone call, by the way, she accuses me of referencing the Cowboys here and there. Notice the first point she made about the tight end was Jason Witten. So, Ann, let's look at each other in the mirror here. Let's get a reality check. I'm bringing up Cowboy references. The first thing you did was you pointed to Jason Witten before you pointed to any other tight end. Like I said, let's call a spade here, young lady. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Let's go. I'm animated. I'm worked up. I'm amped up. Let's get Dave in Rochester. Dave, what's happening?
Oh, what's up, brother? I think my internet's a little slow, so I get to, I just heard the Ann thing, man. That's the greatest thing ever.
I figured you'd love that.
Where's Johnny in Iowa today? What's going on?
Well, it's funny, because John emails me. I might as well give a little bit on the stuff that occurs behind closed doors. He emails me, when we were finalizing the week's schedule, and he goes, I just want to give you a heads up. Ann said she's going to call in on Friday. So I was like, all right, listen, I hope you warmed her up for me. She delivered. She was a woman of her word. She called up, and, listen, we move on.
I think we need to take those Tina white pants and put them around her neck.
Well, listen, next time I'm going to have Datino come in and host so he can listen to her nonsense.
You got to let callers in. When Ann calls in, let us callers in on the conversation. I think that'd be pretty funny.
Listen, she always sets off fireworks here. I'll give her credit. The ratings tend to skyrocket when she's on. But, we're not desperate for ratings here. We're not that type of thing.
No. All right. No, I got no question. I just want to check in. You did a great job. That was great, man. Thanks a lot.
Dave, you got it. Always good talking with you. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. I see some Twitter reactions, and I don't mean to be avoiding your tweets. I want to actually read out some of the reaction. I see Anthony in Phoenix wants an update because he must have missed the phone call. Anthony, the best thing I can say is the archive will be up shortly. Trust me, I will make sure that it gets up on Giants.com faster than any archive version humanly imaginable. So in no time, you will be able to hear Ann's nonsense. My bottom line is it speaks for itself. We'll get back to the phone lines here momentarily. 201-939-4513. Let's check out some of the comments on Twitter. Let's actually look for some hardcore X's and O's stuff as opposed to all the reaction to Ann. My goodness, this is all lighting up here on Ann in D.C. Okay, let's see if I can find something that is not Ann-related. My goodness. I got to admit, the Big Blue Nation does a great job in terms of reacting and getting on fellow callers. Avery actually chimes in on my point about the Seahawks here at TQManAF. You have to score points. Lance, Seattle's offense as rated number 18, number one in defense last year. Well, the offense was rated number 18. The defense was rated number one. So, Avery, I think you essentially backed up my point here. They had a higher-ranked defense than they did offense. Now, granted, 18 is better than the low 20s where the Giants were. You're going to tell me, though, that the Giants' offense, given the improvements on the offensive line, addressing the wide receiver core, addressing the running backs, is not bound to improve its productivity? I'm not telling you that they're going to be the number one offense in the NFL, but you've got to expect that they're going to make some strides here. The point is, you don't have to be a top 10 offense in this league. Let me clarify my point if you want to get nitpicky here. If you have a top 10 defense and you have a middle of the pack offense, you have a very good shot of making noise in this league. Let's not forget the parity in this league. Now, I think we tend to overlook that too. What sets the NFL apart from any other league, the NBA, for example, we have three of the four teams that made the Eastern and Western Conference Finals last year are back in the finals. How often do you get that in the NFL? Doesn't happen very often because of the parity in the league, where a team can win two games one season, can turn around and win 14. Look at the Kansas City Chiefs, for example, from 2 years ago to this past season. So it's not that difficult to turn things around overnight. I think the Giants have addressed their needs, and I don't think it's a stretch to say that the offense is going to get better, and the defense should hopefully stay as is, if not improve a little bit. Yes, the competition is going to go up. And I'm not making bold predictions here that the Giants are going to be ranked here in offense, ranked here in defense, but the trends that we've seen across the NFL landscape, you have a good defense and you have a respectable offense, you're on the right track. The San Francisco 49ers, built on defense, have a good offense. Kaepernick had to rein it in a little this season. He wasn't running as much as he was in previous years. They were missing a good nucleus of their receiving core for the majority of the season. Remember, Crabtree was hurt. It was really Anquan Boldin and Vernon Davis. And look at the numbers. Anquan Boldin and Vernon Davis caught all of their touchdowns for the majority of the season until the Crabtrees of the world came back. They used a rotational running game. They weren't an explosive pass game. They rely on their running game. Same thing with the Seahawks. They rely on their running game. They rely on Marshawn Lynch, and then they complement that with their receiving game. You look at some of the other offenses that did not have a good defense, they struggled. The Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta had offensive line issues, but Atlanta had one of the best offenses, at least on paper. Did they have a great defense? No coincidence. The Falcons struggled. Let's look at the NFL standings from last year. I mean, it's a trend across the league. If you want to get caught up with tight ends and saying that this is going to be the make-or-break position for the Giants, I think we're missing the point here in the whole conversation. Dallas Cowboys, how about you stick in the NFC East? Dallas had one of the worst defenses in the NFL. They were able to put up points, but they had the worst offense. I mean, the worst defense, excuse me. So what good did that do? So they could put up points? You don't have a defense, you're going to struggle. Chicago Bears. Bears had one of the best offenses in the NFL. They had Martellus Bennett. They had Alshon Jeffrey. They had Brandon Marshall. They had one of the tallest receiving cores in the NFL. They were able to stretch the field. They had Matt Forte, too. Defense struggled. It wasn't opportunistic as it was in years before. You have a good defense, a game-changing defense. All you need is a middle-of-the-pack offense. I'm not saying you need an average offense is going to get the trick done, but I don't think you need an explosive offense that's going to put up a ridiculous amount of points. Because if you have a good enough defense, you don't need to outscore everybody every single week. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Emilio. Emilio is on the line. Emilio, what's happening?
How you doing, pal?
Doing well, Emilio.
Is your blood pressure a little bit better?
My blood pressure's doing all right. You know, too bad John Schmelk's not here. His blood pressure usually goes through the roof. I usually have to calm him down. It may be fair to say that I need John to calm me down today. I'm not necessarily going to disagree.
All right, well, a few different points we could bring up is, one, the time of possession is going to be different this year. They're going to be committed to running the ball. The offensive line is better. The running backs are definitely better. That's going to help out the defense. The back seven being better this year on D is also going to help out the pass rush.
Well, they complement one another. I think that that's
my point. That's where I think the changes they made go hand in hand.
Well, we're just assuming, though, that that pass rush is going to get back to what it was because that was the big thing that was neglected last season.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is the pass rush is going to have a little bit more time.
Given the fact that they had some improvement. No,
yes, I
think that's a valid
my point.
Given the depth that they have at corner and the fact that they're getting some safeties back healthy, you would hopefully buy JPP and company some additional time to get to the quarterback. I don't think that's a stretch at all.
You know, I mean, we got one of the best slot corners in the NFL also, where I think that's going to help.
Walter Thurman, absolutely.
Yes, the receiving core is definitely better.
The receiving core, I think, has some guys that they brought in that are a little bit more proven as opposed to last year where the depth, there were some more question marks. For example, a guy like Jernigan has a little bit more experience under his belt. So I would give a check mark to that department as well.
But I'm not even talking. I don't even think people realize how good this kid Odell Beckham Jr. is. I really don't.
Well,
they're going to be really surprised when they watch this kid.
If you watch highlights, if you watch what he did for LSU, he was a game changer on special teams and on offense. So if he could translate that here, you're right. I think that
a couple of things I really like about him, you know, and it's hard to teach. One, he has power. He has phenomenal hands. He does not catch the ball with his body. He catches it with his hands. He goes up. He fights for the ball. He snaps. He reminds me a little bit of Victor Cruz, just a little tougher and a little quicker.
Well, he is aggressive. I mean, from what I've seen, it's not as if he just waits for the football to come to him. And any wide receiver in this league, you need to be able to outdo your corner. You can't just let all of a sudden the football magically come into your hands. And I think he showcased that during the course of his college career. I think it's fair to be a little bit concerned about the size, but I think he'll make up for the size in the other areas that you pointed out, such as his aggressiveness as getting to the football.
And I think that's going to help. Eli needs that. He needs the guy that fights for the ball and goes up for it, not the guy that just stands there and waits for it.
Well, they had a lot of that last season, so you're right. That, to me, is the one thing
that contributed to a lot of the problems last year, too.
Absolutely. A lot of wide receivers were bailing out, and they weren't necessarily helping Eli Manning's cause, and he was just getting rid of the football because he had no time to set his feet. So you add up all those factors, it's no surprise that the offense struggled.
On a few of those plays last year with Akeem Nix, I mean, it was so obvious that he had just given up and watched the play. I mean, it was sickening.
Well, Akeem Nix, I think, was not getting the separation that he was getting over the course of previous seasons. So that was one factor. And part of it was also, you know, the ball would go over the middle and Nix would maybe stop short in his route and the ball would get deflected. It would lead to an interception. So all of that, I think, was well documented last season.
And this kid, the fourth round, the kid Williams, I mean, you get 2,200 yards when they got 10 guys in the box against you. In my eyes, that says a lot.
Well, but once again, I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer. I just think that you got to look at it. Okay, that's college, NFL, different story. Do they have the same respect for Andre Williams and so forth? So, I mean, things are going to change a little, but it's good that he has the experience where people have been honing in on him when they went up against Boston College, and he still had success in picking up the big yardage. If you could then that should bode well for you moving forward.
That's my point. The one good thing, yeah, maybe he didn't catch a pass last year, but he's a very good pass protector.
Well, when he was asked to do that, I think
he did well.
Proved that.
And I don't think
that.
I mean, listen, I don't think he's horrible. I mean, if he could catch 2-3 passes a game, enough to keep the defenses honest when he's in there. I mean, you know, you catch two passes a game, you push it, you know, you're in the mid-30s in receptions.
I don't even think they're going to need him, though, to catch passes, to be honest.
But what I mean by catching passes is to keep the defense honest when he's in the game, not let them strictly think it's going to be a running play.
And I'm sure Ben McAdoo would probably line him up in different formations to catch the defense off guard. But you know what? Even if you know he's going to run the football, if you go based on his college track record, Emilio, and as you mentioned, you have confidence that he's going to be that big bruiser, you don't have to try to catch the defense off guard. If he's strong enough and the offensive line does its trick, if you want to run up the gut and the defense knows you're going to run up the gut, you should still be able to make the play.
No, that's not what I mean. My point is I want the defense when he's in there to have to at least think that there's a possibility. And, you know, when you're playing defense and you have to think, what happens?
Well, sometimes you're caught off guard. I understand that. But then
that's all I'm saying.
Sometimes, though, you get too creative, and that doesn't necessarily do wonders for your offense, too. You have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, agreed. I just think, you know, a couple of spots they probably could have did a little better in the draft. But I like him. I love the second-round pick, who, by the way, he's played all over the line in college. Played left tackle, center, guard.
He played mostly guard and center,
as opposed
to tackle.
But I mean, yeah. But my point is, there's some versatility there also.
There is, but I think I still get back to last season. The goal is to keep these guys in one spot, Emilio. You do not want to revisit what you did last year.
I agree with you because as bad, and nobody's harsher on Beattie than I was, and still am. But when you got the left guard that's next to you every other week is someone different, you know, it kind of throws your game off also.
And I don't think enough people are talking about that. That, I think, was a big contributing factor to Beattie's struggles.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right, Emilio, I'm going to let you go.
Right,
I want to try to get to some other calls. Appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Thank you for the calls.
You got it. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. And we got Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Lance, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Len. How about yourself?
Great, great, great. I tell you, the hosts on Big Blue Kickoff Live are terrific. you did a great job this morning.
Well, appreciate that, Len.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I feel a lot better about the Andre Williams pick if our offensive line was a little more settled. I just keep thinking, you know, all eyes on Andre when he's going to get the ball, and we're going to need some studs up front to play their best, and which moves me to the second-round pick, Richburg. If Richburg doesn't start on day one, or let's give him a chance. If he doesn't start by week six, Lance, I look at that pick and say, what did you do it for? Why didn't you go in another direction? We really got to build up that offensive line.
Well, we have a long way to go till we get to week six. And
yeah,
I understand. Listen, it's a fair criticism. You're right. With a second-round pick, you expect him to immediately come in and transition, especially when there's an opportunity to grab that starting job.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
and that's the key. The opportunity is there. Hopefully, you know, maybe Walden's going to turn out to be a terrific football player. You know, you got to hope so. And maybe Richburg transitions to guard and becomes a terrific guard. But, you know, the opportunity is there and the need is there, which gives this gentleman an opportunity. You know,
well, and I also like his toughness, Len. Regardless of what he did at Colorado State, and the line as a whole did a pretty good job protecting the quarterback, but I like the fact that he got a finger that was broken and he still managed to play through that. That, to me, is something that the Giants need. They need toughness. I mean, let's be honest. They need the guys to get down and dirty in the trenches, as a number of you have pointed out on Twitter. They need to get their identity back. That's what they need.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
And you've been talking about that for weeks.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Lance, can I sift through some of Ann's comments, or would you prefer not to do that?
No, you can try to make some sense of it. Listen, it's an open discussion here. Even though we don't necessarily agree
Good.
With everybody, I am
Good.
All for having a healthy debate.
Well, and I got to tell you, that's what makes the show so great. People's perspectives, passionate Giants fans coming at it from different angles, including Ann. Obviously, she's a passionate Giants fan.
Passions used very loosely on this program, apparently, but anyway.
You know, there is a cost involved. I mean, she's not a paying customer from the standpoint of – we all aren't paying customers from the standpoint of paying $5 to listen this morning. But, you know, Lance, I've been listening for an hour and 15 minutes this morning. Some people have tweeted 3 and 4 times and called in on her break. I mean, you know, the old sales adage, time is money. You know, we're taking the time to do that. I didn't like the call. I wasn't terribly excited about the call. But, you know, from a standpoint, we are customers. We're not laying out dollars, but we are giving up time. And I'm appreciative of the time that I get. Believe me, I'm not being critical of that in any shape, manner, or form. But, and I hate to go professorial on you, but it's not just about dollars and cents. I mean, it's the time involved that people take to call in and make the show what it is.
Well, and Len, in fairness, and I don't mean to interrupt you, I'll let you continue. That's why I have no problem giving Ann airtime, because a lot of people on Twitter are saying that we should just ban her completely from the show. But that would basically be countering your point right now. You're right.
Yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
is invested in the team, whether or not they're reasonable or not. They still deserve an opportunity.
Yeah, and invested in the show.
Correct.
You know, we've given you know time and energy to the show. And thank the Lord that we have, and that we have as many great callers as we, you know, as we do. One other point, we talk about, you know, tight ends moving in, new offense with McAdoo and so forth, and you know all this talk about the new Giants and the way they're going to play the game. You know, it's all about scoring more points or winning the game. Let me start with winning the game. And again, I'm not supporting Ann's point about scoring more points, but it is about scoring more points than the opposition. And we keep talking about how now we got a running back, short yardage situation. And it was one of the previous callers that made a point about time of possession. Man, I think that's a key. I mean, if you look at the number of first downs we averaged per game last year, I think it was too low, Lance. I think we got to continue to try to move the ball better. All I want next year is three more first downs a game. If we can average three more first downs a game, that'll turn out to be approximately 50 more first downs than we had this year. You know, we start to tilt the field. And the game gets easier when you can tilt the field. I want to take you back to one play last year when Holiday ran that punt back in our home opener, that 83, 81-yard, whatever it happened to be. I think you remember.
In the Broncos game, yeah.
Yeah, in the Broncos game. If we get one more first down, Lance, and Weatherford has to punt, given the new field position, Holiday's fielding that ball inside the 10-yard line, and he's not going to run it back. It's a whole different scenario. I mean, we gotta move the ball better, get more first downs, score points, begin to tilt the field in our favor.
Well, I'll let you continue, but that actually gets to the point that I wanted to bring up. What I was going to say is I agree. I think that they need to obviously have more productivity on offense and gain more first downs, but let's look at it from this perspective. With the additions they made on special teams and defense, can't you make the argument that if they get more productivity out of those groups, that helps field position on offense and perhaps some of those units score points to take further pressure off of the offense this year?
Oh, absolutely. I think between the draft and free agency up to this point, it's a whole different football team. And the potential is there for us to get more first downs per game. And I think the key, that's really what it's all about, the time of possession, tilting the field. Then if we get a three and out, on defense, we're getting the ball in better position to be able to move it down the field. It's all about getting ourselves in a position to score. Whether we win the game 7-6, 17-16, 42-39, somewhere along the line, all of our strategy has to manifest itself in points.
And I think that the other units are going to help that cause this season. Especially, I mean, think about this, Len. When was the last time the Giants had this many playmakers, just on paper, who could return kickoffs and punts? You tell me the last time. And you've been around, Len. You know.
I'm telling you, it looks real good. It does. I mean, I'm excited to see the special teams play. And, it's going to be one of those. It's going to be one of those situations that, maybe we don't get the 80-yarder from Holiday, but maybe in a key situation we get a 30-yarder.
That's two less first downs that you got to get. Yeah.
Yeah, when you play from the middle of the field, the first downs get easier. I mean, the playbook opens up from midfield. It's a whole different game. And I see that as being an important element of what McAdoo is going to bring to us. And, I just want to see our starting position be a lot better than it was. Here's my guideline. I want to see at least twice as many first downs, as we have possessions. If we have 10 possessions, I want 20 first downs or more. 11 possessions, 22 or more. I think if we can double the first downs to percent to our possessions, we're going to win a lot of games. We're going to be in position to win a lot of games. That to me is going to be something that I'm going to look at. Last year, only retired guys can try to figure out these kinds of stats.
Well, only guys that can sit back on the rocking chair and type away. That's it.
There you go. I think it was 1.7. Or I think it wasn't twice as much. I think it was like 1.7. If we had 10 possessions, I think we were getting like 17, maybe 18 first downs. I think we got to double that. It's not much. I just want three, which gives me 50 more during the year.
And it keeps the defense off the field, too.
It keeps the defense off the field. that one first, again, on the holiday punt, I've been thinking about this the whole first, you know, the whole off season. If Holiday fields that ball inside the 10 instead of on the 17, he doesn't even run it back. He doesn't even run. Forget the fact that he scored. They're starting on the 7 if he calls a fair catch.
Now, with the way Denver's offense was moving the chains, you know, who knows how things play out. But the point is,
that's
you're
right.
You basically don't put your defense in a very tough position, and you take pressure off of your offense, and that's the key.
The other thing that stands out in that game, I hope I never see this again in another Giants game. No Sean Marino getting to the outside, coming around that outside. I mean, did he do it once? Did he do it twice? Did he do it three times? I kept thinking, can't we just seal this outside somehow? It's funny how things stand out in particular games during
the season.
He
was doing that on the ground, and he was doing that as a receiver in that game.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Hey, Lance, thanks for your time. And just, again, I mean, the hosts are just really terrific. And it's a great listen.
Appreciate that, Len.
With and without Ann. It's a great listen.
Sounds good. All right, Len, have a good weekend. Good speaking with you. Len in Maryland. And, you know, Len does bring up a very good point. Not necessarily with respect to the Giants football point that I wanted to piggyback off of, but what he started off his phone call with. You know, it goes without saying that this is an outlet for the fans. And, you know, I mean, if I was too harsh on Ann from the perspective of the paying customer angle, did not mean to take away the significance of the fans on this show. I was just making the point literally, I guess, in terms of paying to listen to the show. But I understand everybody is invested in this team, as Len mentioned, and he hit it right on the nose. And that's why, whether or not you agree with everybody that calls in or disagrees, you know, we all give everybody an opportunity to chime in. Now, Ann can be frustrated because I did cut her off, but Ann got plenty of time to make her point. There's a point where you need to have some facts and substance to back up your point, like anything else on any show. And I felt that she was going in circles and wasn't really making a good point. So that's why I cut her off. It wasn't as if I was trying to disrespect her or not give her the same amount of time as anybody else on this show. We try to give as much flexibility to all the callers, whether or not there's substance or lack of substance. But you got to at least get to the heart and soul of the point here. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow here with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll try to take a few more calls. We're giving you an extended edition this morning. You could also chime in at Lance Meadow on Twitter. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's get Avery in New York. Avery, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how's it going?
Do well, Avery. How about yourself? What you got?
All right, this is the first year I've actually called in, like the past couple of months. This is my first year. I didn't even, you know, I've been busy with work and other things, so I really haven't called in. I didn't even know this show existed until maybe about 2 months ago. I had a little bit more time, so I found out about the show, and Ann is really something. I don't want to belabor the point, but because I kept tweeting everyone, who is this Ann person? Because everyone was going off about Ann, and I'm like, now I see what I've missed all these years.
She's a blossoming star. I don't know where you've been, Avery. I mean, all the content that you missed by actually doing work and being productive in life, I can't tell you.
No, but, you know, but it was good to exchange. And remember, I'm a paying customer, so you have to listen to what I have to say.
Yes, exactly.
But anyway, it's back to the point about the scoring the points. I'm one of the ones that's really been an advocate. You know, I've been saying, tweeting that we need to score points this year because, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I get tired, and I keep saying this. Standing in front of the TV, remember 2011? When every time it was a fourth quarter comeback, you're standing, at least me, standing in front of the big screen TV with a drink in your hand and your other hand in your mouth, biting your teeth, hoping that Eli can come back and bring us back in this game. Now that we have an opportunity to actually score some points, that's a good thing. You know, defense wins the championship, but you also have to score some points. It's not just about the defense. 2011, I'll give you an example. The Giants and New England both had top 10 offenses that year. You know where their defenses were ranked in that year? They both were down in the 20s.
However, Avery, keep in mind, it was defense, though, that got them to the Super Bowl because things started to click.
Yeah.
So they turned things around late, and they got hot at the right time.
Exactly. That's my point. So, but you also have to score some points, too. You know, I think that, you know, I think that sort of gets lost in the shuffle, but I don't think you need to be, if you, like you were saying, you know, and I agree with you, if you're a middle-of-the-road scorer, you don't have to be in the top 10 in the offense. If you're, but if your defense is good, you can win, but you got to be able to score some points. And I don't think, and I've been saying on Twitter, too, the tight end thing, we need one, but we've gotten through very well with just average to good tight ends. We have a good coaching staff that can really bring us, can build up the guys that we have, hopefully, and we can score some points. Especially now, like you were saying earlier, we have more weapons. We guys that can run. We have a lot more to work with now than we had in the past. So I'm looking forward to this year. My only thing is because if you – you know, if have you looked at some of the offenses of some of these teams that's coming up on our schedule between the Lions and all the other ones? I think our defense is probably better than all of those because at least last year, as bad as we were, we're at least an eighth-ranked defense. So, you know, hopefully, do you think the defense is better this year than it was last year?
Well, they got John Beeson into the season. This year, they're going to have a full training camp with him for him to set the tone. So that's clearly a bonus. As Emilio brought up earlier, Avery, you have a much more aggressive secondary. You have Walter Thurman. You have Dominique Rogers-Cromartie now opposite Prince. So you've bolstered that group. Linebackers opposite and around Beeson. Okay, there's some question marks there, but I think that with Jameel McClain, they brought in some more established vets, and you're assuming that the pass rush will improve, and I don't think that's a stretch.
Right.
So I would agree, if you finished eighth and you had to wait an entire season to get there, if you're coming back with at least a number of the same weapons plus even better talent, there's no reason to think that they shouldn't be able to be in that ballpark. Figure between 10 and 15, I would say, even if you keep expectations in check.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But I'm looking forward to the season coming up. I have high hopes, and if we can get a tight end, we'll get one. If we don't, then we'll another. I think we can do well with the guys that we have. But we'll just see what happens. But thanks a lot, Lance. Have a good weekend, and thanks for taking my call.
You as well, Avery, and I'm glad that now you know who Ann is. I feel a lot better about that.
Yes, I was, because I kept tweeting everybody, who is this Ann person? And everyone had all these tweets, and no one was responding. And then today, I said, oh, now I know.
It all comes together. So if there's anything we were able to get out of this morning's program, Avery, I'm glad that we came full circle. We connected the dots. So that's certainly a positive. All right, Avery, have a good weekend. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. I'm actually bringing up the numbers from last year on offense because obviously this has become a big topic of discussion. The top 10 offenses in points per game, not total offense, points per game. So here are the top 10 teams from 2013. Denver was number one at 37.9 points per game. Okay, Denver made it to the Super Bowl. The Bears were number two. Bears missed the playoffs. The Patriots were number three. Patriots ultimately lost to the Denver Broncos. The Eagles were number four. Okay, Eagles wound up winning the division, making the playoffs, but ousted in the first round. Cowboys were fifth. They did not make the playoffs. The Bengals were sixth. Quick exit for the Bengals as they went up against the Chargers. The Chiefs were sixth. They put up plenty of points, and then everything collapsed against the Indianapolis Colts. Packers were eighth, which is impressive considering Aaron Rodgers finished and missed a handful of games, I should say. Seahawks were tied with the Packers for eighth, and then you had the Saints as 10th. Now, a number of the teams I just named made the playoffs, so it's not as if offense is meaningless, and I wasn't making the point that offense is meaningless, but Seattle, to me, even though it was the eighth-ranked offense, which is pretty good with all things considered, they won because of their defense. Their defense was a game-changing unit, meaning there could have been games where the offense didn't click, but you knew the defense was going to be able to make stops. They could maybe force a fumble, get an interception. Case in point, look at the NFC Championship game against the Niners. Kaepernick had those three costly turnovers in the fourth quarter. Majority of them were as a result of some of the pressure that got to Kaepernick and some of the deflections that were made by the secondary. So, offense, you need to score points. Avery hammered it home, even Ann did. We at least may be pat her on the back for that. You do have to score points, but I still think if you're in the teens where your offense is ranked, as long as you have a solid defense, you're going to be on the path to compete for a Super Bowl, as opposed to being so lopsided on offense where you ignore defense, then you're really going to hurt your chances. Let's head back to the lines, try to squeeze in a few more callers as we wind down the program here this morning. Steve is in D.C., and I am sure he is worked up after that earlier call. Steve, what's happening?
What's happening, Lance? Man, you know, let me just say this, because I really don't even want to, you know, give too much credence to that ignorant.
There's no point of giving credence to that.
Mouth. But let me assure anybody who even for a minute listened to that, that, you know, first of all, I call things how I see them. I could care less about anyone's race. Only color I care about is blue. Okay, I call it how I see it, period. And, you know, basically, you know, the only reason I even brought up Jerry Reese is because obviously a lot of people try to, do I think that he's perfect? Absolutely not. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying it's a joint effort. So for people to single out Reese, I think it's just crazy. But anyway, you know, the one thing that did bother me, Lance, is, and I know you don't, you know, you kind of host when you can, but it just kind of made me wondering if my good friend Len from Columbia is listening, because I know I'm the one who always brings up the time of possession. I'm sure other calls will tell you that. I'm always bringing that up. And I even brought it up yesterday. I was telling, you know, John that even in our wins, we possess the ball, you know, less than the opposing team, you know. And that is really, you know, a sign of obviously the style of offense we were playing along with the turnovers. And I've always talked about how it's hurt the defense, you know, over the last couple of years, too. Even when we score too fast, you know, and the defense is just not getting enough chance to rest. So I totally agree with that notion. But
follow up on your point, Steve, didn't mean to cut you off. I'll let you continue. I have the numbers in front of me. Giants 24th last season, just to put things in perspective, in time of possession per game. They had the ball just over 29 minutes, but that was 24th. Out of 32 teams. So that's the bottom of the barrel there.
Listen, and let me tell you something. I guarantee you the first six games, we were probably 31st. You know, we started running the ball, you know, later in the season, and we made a conscious effort. And it made a big difference. I think that's really what kind of helped us turn it around, would help our defense turn it around as well, too. I've always kind of been screaming that, you know, we need to be a little bit more methodical the way we move the ball down the field. You know, I kind of question – you know, whether, you know, Eli enjoys playing the game or he just enjoys, you know, scoring touchdowns, because he's always kind of bypassing the check down and just trying to score too fast. And I think it really, you know, it's been very detrimental to our defense. But speaking of the defense, I'm expecting our defense to score some points for us, you know, give us some shorter fields and, you know, score some points for us too. So I don't really necessarily think we need a tight end, and I would never be ignorant enough to quote Terrell Suggs and say we need a big white tight end. How stupid is that? I mean, please. And I'm the one protecting people because of their race. But anyway.
Well, that's why we can only laugh about it. I mean, that's the best thing you could do at this point.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Lance, you know, up until last year, the last 2 years, we scored probably over Eli Manning's, you know, career probably averaged about at least 24 points a game, I would imagine. But
Avery was referencing the 2011 season before you came on, Steve, and I mean they were the comeback kids that year, and they were putting up the points. So I don't think that's a stretch at all. I mean, their offense was known to light up the scoreboard, even if it was lopsided and it was more in the fourth quarter than any other quarter. You still walked away with some big totals.
Yeah, we're not going to have a problem, you know, scoring this year. I don't think we will. You know, maybe scoring from the green zone, maybe, or, you know, red zone, as some people refer to. But
well, I like that you got Tom Coughlin jargon down. That's impressive.
Absolutely. True fan. But, you know, listen, I honestly kind of threw me off. I wasn't expecting my name to be thrown out there today as much as I was looking to be entertained.
Well,
know,
Steve, you should actually look at that as a sign of respect, because, you see, you're one of our regulars, and Anne thinks so highly of you that during her dissertation, she had to highlight some of our key callers. So I'd actually take it as a compliment.
Hey, I'm going to do that. It's Friday. I'll go ahead and take your advice on that one, man. But listen, you know, I bleed blue. No, I mean, this is a place where I can be critical. Do I talk to my Cowboys fans and tell tell how what I don't like about Eli? Absolutely not. This is family to me. So I'm always going to call it how I see it, you know. But let there be no mistaking. When it comes to any outside teams, you know, I'm going to keep my negative opinion to myself, you know. But, you know, certainly I don't think anybody's perfect as far as, you know, whether it be the coaches or the management. But I think these guys work good together, and, you know, and I do trust in Reese. So, you know, forgive me for that if you must. But, listen, great show, Lance, and I'm glad you took the call. And I was telling, you know, I hope Paul gets in on the act one day.
Well, listen, if there's any person that I would love to have a one-on-one with Ann, it would be Paul Dottino. So I will certainly push for that.
Me too.
All right.
I'm going to leave it at that, man. Have a great weekend, buddy, and I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Steve. Appreciate the phone call. 201-939-4513, the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter, at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Lance Meadow with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. All right, let's try to squeeze in at least one or two more callers. We've got Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, Lance. How you doing, man?
Doing well, Drew. You sound low-key. You all right? I was expecting a little bit more energy here.
Nah, I'm good.
Okay, you had me worried. I thought Ann threw you off your game. I mean, we can't have our regulars be all tongue-tied here.
Nah, man, she's comical. You know, first and foremost, man, I will say that, you know, you show great restraint in dealing with Ann. So personally, man, I don't think you need to apologize for anything. You definitely gave Ann more than enough, you know, I would say rope to hang herself. Personally, I don't know how you let her go on as long as you did. So for me, I don't see where you need to apologize for anything.
Well, I do appreciate that. It's just that I understand. I look at what you guys and gals write on Twitter, and I understand that some of the racial connotations that she brought up could be uncomfortable for everyone. And Steve even brought that up. So I mean, obviously, if anybody was rubbed the wrong way, you know, that's not the intention of this program, obviously.
Well, no. I mean, you know, and you know, as an African American, you know, I mean, obviously, I've been on that side. So, but at any rate, there was really no call for that. But you know, I just wanted to say, you know, because I really don't want to waste my phone call on Ann. But you know, basically, it's this. You know, I kind of felt like she's pushing the boundaries, and she do need to be banned. However, I do understand that Len made a good point. And, she is, you know, paying with regards to her time to call in. However, I do think that there needs to be a certain amount of decorum that needs to be displayed. And if you push that boundary, yeah, I think you should be banned. At any rate, I just wanted to say that. And I just wanted to call in to compliment you on your calmness in handling that situation, because I do think she was way overboard and out of line. Last thing I just want to comment is this: I will say this as usual, and I will say this loudly. I completely disagree with Steve with regard to Eli. I'm sure he wasn't crying when we was winning those Super Bowls and Eli was playing his little comeback games and everything else. Bottom line is, and I'll say this: I said it once, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it 1,000 times. We knew what we was drafting when we drafted Eli Manning. We didn't draft a mobile quarterback. We drafted a gunslinger. And the bottom line is, whether we like it or not, that's what Eli is. He's a gunslinger who goes out there and tries to get the job done. Now, when it works, nobody's complaining. When it does work, everybody's complaining.
Well, Drew, you know the name of the game in the NFL is, what have you done for me lately? You know, everybody never looks back at what they've done and what they have on their resume. It's all about the present. And that's just the world of sports. It's not necessarily just the NFL. That's why I'm very interested to see what the tone of the conversation is going to be this season, assuming that Eli Manning does bounce back. I think we're going to have a lot of 180s that are going to be pulled.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I agree with you. I'm dying to see what the season's going to be like. And, I will tell you right now, to be quite honest, I am still concerned, you know, because there's a lot of new parts in this and on the team right now. So, you know, of course you always want your team to win, but, you know, honestly, I don't see us, you know, going, you know, 11-1 or something like that. You know, I do think that there'll be some struggles. However, I don't know that Eli will have the kind of horrendous year that he had last year. And make no mistake, Lance, let me say this real quick, okay? I am not saying Eli did not have a horrendous year last year. He most certainly did. Was I screaming and hollering and cussing Eli left and right? Yes, I was. But I'm still an Eli fan. So I just want to leave with that.
Sounds good, Drew. Appreciate the kind words. Appreciate the commentary. Have a good weekend. 201-939-4513. Drew mentioned that he's not expecting the Giants to go 11-1. You don't need to go 11-1. You don't need to necessarily have any specific win total that you have to come up with before the season. There's one goal, make the playoffs. And the Giants have done it as wild card winners, and then they've gone on to win the Super Bowl. And Giants fan base knows that better than anyone. So it's not necessarily winning this, winning that. Just make the playoffs. Be one of the six teams that gets in. And as we all know, anything can happen. So to say that they got to win this amount of games, just make the playoffs. It's been on a little drought thus far the last few seasons, so they want to obviously have an opportunity to get back in the game. All right, let's head back to the lines. We've got Bob on Long Island. Bob, what's happening?
How you doing, Lance? I'm the caller that had battles with John.
Oh, I remember. Well, listen, I was present for those battles too, Bob. You know, don't leave me out. I mean, we spread the wealth here and spread the blame.
Well, you were dragged in on my third conversation.
So you worked out the kinks with John, and then you brought me in. I see how it works. All right.
Well, yeah, too bad. You caught me in my tirade by the third conversation. My buddies are prodding me and saying, you got to get back on there because you're not getting your point across. He's disregarding you, and then you caught my tirade. First question I want to ask you. Do you guys miss going up to Albany for training camp, or was it inconvenient and it's more convenient for you guys? Because as a fan, it was so much more pleasant for us.
Well, to answer the question, I'm going to speak for myself personally, and this is 10 times more convenient. And I'll just say that only because I obviously do other work for other entities. So for it to be local here is night and day compared to having to commute up to Albany. So personally, I have no complaints. I can understand that the layout was a little bit more comfortable for the fans, but I think the Giants have done a really nice job last season to set days aside to have the fans watch, get up close and personal with the players. There may not be nearly as much space as the Albany campus, but for me, I think it's absolutely convenient to be kept here at the facility.
Yeah, I can understand that. For us as a fan, like for me personally, my group, we made it a ritual every year to take 2-week vacation, and a whole bunch of us with family would go up there, and we would rent the Marriott courtyard, and we would catch the morning, the two-a-days. And then if we got bored, we'd truck up to Saratoga and watch the horses race and catch
them. Look at you, building a whole vacation around it. Impressive.
Oh, every year. It was a ritual for 20 years. We miss it so much. And before we would do that, we, living near Hofstra, we would get our coffee and newspaper and just go into the bleachers and watch the Jets every day. And just to see football, you know. And a few of us are Jet fans in our group, and so that made it fun also.
Now, what I would pay to listen to the conversation between you and your buddies watching the Jets perform, that is something.
Oh, God, it was hysterical. It really was. We miss Hofstra. Now, Hofstra's gone, so we've been doing that since the Joe Willie days, and we lost Albany, so we lost our 2-week vacation. It was we filled our whole summer with football, and now we're out of the loop.
Well, listen, if you come to the Giants facility when training camp starts, we can have a battle royale between you and John Schmelk in person. Then you're going to need a vacation, trust me.
Oh, God. See, Paul Bettino and Paul Schwartz, he knows us regularly, and we would rip them all the time. And it's comical to hear Paul over the radio because he really came a long way. And I don't know what capacity it was early on, but now he's brought on as an expert witness, expert analyst, and it's really great.
Well, let's put things in perspective here, Bob. He's the self-proclaimed expert witness. You know, nobody necessarily crowned him that. He just woke up one morning after a jog and said, you know what, I'm the king when it comes to the Giants.
But you know what's funny? He was on the show with John, and he couldn't resist. John was backpedaling with his pick on tight end. And Paul looked, it was like he looked, you could hear it. He said, "Boy, did you really do a flip-flop?" And that was made for great radio. When Paul Patino was telling John, "You flip-flop," and John was like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa."
As if Patino hasn't done any flip-flopping in his day, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. I have Zach Martin in my head. I had dreams about him with him. He was on the NFL Network giving his pick.
Well, you and your offensive lineman and your defensive lineman, that's been well established on this program, Bob.
Oh, the old school. After a while, I'm going, what old school is this? You know, I'm older than him. I couldn't figure out what happened with the old school with the line.
So what do you have for me today, Bob? Only because I want to try to squeeze in a few more callers here.
Okay. I got to pat myself on the back because a few of those arguments with John, I went over that, while I was going for Donald, and I, as you know, it was pass rush or bust, the way you eloquently put it. I had to battle him on the line play, and I had... the guys all told me that Jerry Reese monitors this show and get your voice out there, and let them hear it. And we worried about the wide receiver. We eliminated offensive line, and I got snagged up with that conversation because Reese made a statement, hey, listen, we took care of that in free agency. And I tried to make that point, but it didn't come across. And
the same time, he did say that there's also room for improvement. During that press conference.
What position isn't, though? Every position there's room. So it was just a blanket statement. I had Jerry Reese actually sticking up for me. He got insulted hearing that his acquisitions in the offseason with the line, he was defending me. He said, I'm positive these guys are going to make an impact and they're going to do a good job. And I knew he brought them in to start. He didn't bring them in for depth. He drafted a center in the second round for depth, he said. When he says, I'm bringing these guys in and I'm filling my needs in free agency, I try to make that point. That they're not going to go O-line because he took care of it. Now, where John made the mistake was, my guys, we all did our homework right away. As soon as a name popped up, Jerry, Brown, Walt, and we got as much tape to, for $25 today, you could get tape on everybody. And we watched game after game, and we said, these guys are good. These guys are a big upgrade from what we put on the field last year. So we were very content. And I'll say it right now that it's all over and they didn't go O-line, we're looking at three starters from free agency on the line, and I could see a scenario with four starting for the Giants. And my shout out to John is your punishment for fighting me on that one is you're going to have to interview these guys after a win.
Hold on, though. I mean, we really still don't know what the offensive line is going to look like. I understand that they have starting experience, but I think for the most part, a lot of the guys you named, they're going to be backups during the course of the season.
All right, what's your starting offensive line? I'll tell you what I think the starting offensive line.
Well, you're going to have Beedy at left tackle, assuming he's healthy. You're going to have Jeff Schwartz at left guard. I think Richburg is ultimately going to win the center job. And then right guard, Chris C is going to be penciled in, and Pugh is going to be at the tackle. That's your starting group, at least going into the season right now.
Okay, could I give you mine now?
Sure.
And we'll see who,
sure, what, right, what's yours?
Okay, mine is, like I said, and Pugh will be moved to the left tackle spot. And you heard that from only me. Nowhere else. And no analyst, no beat writer.
Well, a lot of our fans, though, have campaigned to have Pugh move over to left tackle, dating back to even last season.
Only after I mentioned it. On the 28th was the first time.
All right, Bob, you set the tone on this program. You continue to pat yourself on the back. So anyway, Pugh. So, all right, so what's your offensive line?
Jerry's on every radio station saying, don't forget, Pugh is a left tackle. I have the option. And they said, what about Beedy? And there's where I hit another one out of the park. He said Beedy could be moved could play right tackle and compete. He's done that before for us. And John fought me on that. And that's what that was my point.
Well, you're playing a lot of musical chairs, though. Keep that in mind. And that doesn't work very well for the Giants.
Well, I think that's a good thing. First of all, Pugh is a left tackle. He was in college. He played the right spot.
Correct. But look at how well he performed down the stretch at the right tackle spot.
Which makes me believe he's going to do a fantastic job at left tackle because he had to switch his whole footwork. And that's hard to do. And when they get these tackles and they put them at guard or they put them at the opposite tackle to start off, and it's only to start off, they have a harder time doing that because of the footwork they have to learn. And now he's going to kick back to his natural side. I think he's going to do it. Bang,
you're going to have to go through the process, though, of readjusting the footwork and the handwork. I mean, you're under the assumption, yes, it's built into him already, but he's still going to have an adjustment period.
I think that after training camp, it's going to be like, because I heard him interviewed. And he said, that's my natural spot. I'm better at it. He even campaigned for it himself. But we'll have to see. We'll see if I'm right.
So anyway, before I let you go, Bob, though, give me the rest of your old line because you wanted to lay
okay.
out. So what do you got?
Schwartz at left guard. Walton at center. Snee at right. And Jerry Jones back to his normal spot, which is right tackle. I think he'll beat out Beattie and, for that position because even Reese said, when he's healthy, he could compete and he's on every station, the fan, and he could compete on the right side, which there's no musical chairs. These are the natural spots for the line. And if there's an injury, they got a lot of moves they can make to fortify that line with Schwartz playing two positions. You got Jerry could play two positions.
They do have versatility. I'll give you that. That's why they brought in those guys. And listen, Bob, I'm going to let you go. I want to try to squeeze in a few more calls. Appreciate the phone call. And I understand Bob's putting a lot of stock in those veterans that Jerry Reese brought in. I think Reese brought them in to provide depth. I don't necessarily see them as starters, but Bob sees them as starters. Listen, we're going to be able to solve this debate after training camp. Right now, it's extremely premature, but I'd find it very hard to believe that the Giants are going to bench Will Beattie in favor of Jerry. And I understand that Bob's saying he's going to move him to the opposite side. I think they look at Pugh as a guy that was very productive at right tackle. You bring Snee back, plays next to a veteran. They feel good about that. And Beattie back to full health for the amount of money they have invested in him. And the fact that they've pretty much played him at left tackle primarily since he's been here, I just don't see them playing a game of musical chairs. The game of musical chairs backfired on them last year. And Jerry Reese even addressed that in the press conference. What makes everyone believe that they're going to think about exploring those options even during the course of training camp? I just don't see that playing out. But we'll be able to see once that week one game comes. If anything, I think they slide in somebody else at left tackle, like a Charles Brown, if Beattie can't go week one, as opposed to moving Justin Pugh over. All right, let's try to get another caller in or two. Stas is in Washington. Stas, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, Lance? Hey, man. So listen, real quick, I'm just going to kind of run through a few things. I always listen to the show, and there's been some stuff that's just coming on the show here that's just extremely asinine, I feel. So I just kind of want to say a couple things. And if Ann really works for the government, then they really need to change their psychiatric evaluation for their employees. I'm just going to say that right now.
No, they do need to take that under advisement. That's a good recommendation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to stop paying my taxes, too. So, first off, grading the draft. Okay, stop trying to grade the draft. You only really want to grade the draft? Wait till 2017. You cannot grade the draft. You have nothing to grade them on. You have only college. 9 times out of 10, college is not transferred. NFL, stop it. Everyone's calling it, I'm giving them an F, I'm giving them a C, I'm giving them a D. You can't give them anything. They haven't even taken the test yet. Okay? Giants fans, stop acting like spoiled babies. Okay? We had a bad year. But if you look at it, since 1986, we're the only NFL team to win 4 Super Bowls. We have won 1 Super Bowl every decade since the 80s. We have a coach who's only delivered 2 losing seasons last year and his first year coaching with us. he's a known winner. I get the Jerry Reese things, you know, like, hey, he's made some bad picks. But if you really look at everyone else in the NFL, guess what? They've made some bad picks too. Like, we got to stop thinking the grass is always green on the other side. I promise you, some teams don't even have grass. Okay, go be a Cleveland Browns fan if you really want to know what bad is. Okay, well, you don't have the same GM every year. Stop hating on Eli Manning. Bottom line, he's won for you more than he's lost for you. Okay, the guy can win. That's what he does. That's what he did in college. That's what he did. That's what he's done in the NFL. He just wins Super Bowls. I don't care about stats. I don't care about touchdown interception ratio. I want a quarterback that in the fourth quarter, 2 minutes to go, and we need a touchdown to win. I say, you know what? He's done it before, and he'll do it again. All right? He holds NFL record for most comebacks, for most touchdowns in the fourth quarter. Give the guy some credit. Okay, he had a bad year. Also, 60% of the time, there's a free rusher coming at him last season. 60% of the time. Go back and look at the film. Go to NFL Replay, pay $40, download the app. You can see entire 2013 games, coaches film. Four different angles. Look at it. The guy has a free rusher every single snap, it almost feels like. Of course he couldn't do anything. Who could? Okay? Stop trying to tell the coaches what tight end they need for their system, because none of us know their system. Only the coaches know their system. What Gilbride needed probably isn't the same thing what McAdoo is going to need. We don't know it yet. We got to wait to see. We're not even going to probably be able to tell that in preseason. We're only going to be able to tell maybe halfway through the season, and we're going to have a better idea. We have no idea, all right? Stop being scared of the competition, okay? I promise they prepare for us the same way we have to prepare for them, okay? Couple of things left. Let me see. Will Beatty, the guy had a horrible year. But 2 years ago on this very call, everyone was calling up, wondering why the Giants hadn't locked him up before the season was over. Why did they let him go into free agency? Give the guy a chance to redeem himself. One bad year, okay? And if you want a pass rush, have an offense that can generate points. Make that other team one-dimensional. You then can pin your ears back. Like, we didn't have a pass rush last year for two reasons. One, we had a softer secondary. Two, we could not stop the team from scoring points. And we couldn't score points. I mean, there was several games when the defense handed us five or six, three and outs. And we couldn't do anything with them.
Well, correct. You can't put the pressure on the opposing quarterback if you have to play catch-up throughout the whole game. So, you know, you really lack creativity and you lack your options. Perry Fuel can only do so much given how games played out. So, I mean, that's a fair analysis and synopsis of why the defense struggled at times. I think a lot of the things that you brought up go hand in hand, and you brought up a good point about Will Beatty. I've been saying the fact that I think you got to go based on his track record as opposed to just looking at this season, and the same thing with Eli Manning. You have to look at track records as opposed to one season. Everyone had a down year last year. I mean, how many bright spots can you really point to on this Giants team last year? Not many.
Dom Beeson, Will Hill, and Rowe.
That's it.
So I get it. I get the frustration of the fanhood, right? But I'm telling you, man, the one thing that always annoyed me about being a New York Giants fan, and I travel for work, so I've lived in several states. I've gone to several different team stadiums. I've never seen people eat their young as much as Giants fans eat their own team. Like, it's crazy. Like, I was blessed to go to the NFC Conference Championship game against the New York Giants versus Green Bay Packers. Do you know what everyone was saying about Brett Favre that day? After the game, everyone went down to the bar behind the stadium, hanging out. Do you know what they're saying? It's so awesome to see our quarterback is still willing to go out there and just sling the ball like a rookie. Like, that's their fandom. Like, no, guy, he lost you the game. His interception ended your Super Bowl run. But they don't turn on their team and want to rip their face off. Like, I hear that almost all the time on this call. People are quicker to rip this team apart to say, hey, you know what, let's back our boys up. Because when they're holding down Lombardi, you want to talk about how much of a fan you are and how much you always support it. This isn't support. Like, give the system, they have a new system in place. Give them some time to show you what they're doing before you want to turn your back on your team like that.
And you bring up a lot of good points, Dawson. Appreciate you weighing in. Thanks so much in terms of the outlook for this coming season. And I think that it's better to look at the complete package over the course of a number of years as opposed to get caught up with one shaky season. And time will tell. I think the Giants were extremely aggressive this offseason. Obviously, they had the draft that played out. They signed a number of undrafted free agents, and you hope that the competition can help bring out the best possible starting talent as well as help beef up the depth chart. All right, so that's going to wrap things up for us this morning. Obviously, we went really extended as opposed to other mornings, but that's what you guys and gals bring to the table. Great calls, great feedback on Twitter. I'll try to answer some of your tweets that I didn't get to address throughout the course of the program. I know a lot of it was a reaction to Ann, so that's why I didn't think we needed to read through a majority of the tweets. But greatly appreciate all the feedback, all the interaction as usual. Big Blue Kickoff Live here each and every morning on Giants.com starting at 9:30 a.m. Eastern. Have a good weekend. Lance Meadows signing off. We'll speak to you next week.